on the subject I call creation. I need to probably define a few terms here before we get going and explain a little bit more about what I'm talking about. Here on Earth, we look up at the stars and peer out in the sky and so forth and wonder where we may have come from, how we got here. Is there any meaning to our life? We search through different belief structures, religions, philosophies, and so forth, trying to answer the big questions in our life, because we really have no factual knowledge exactly where we came from and what's going on in the universe. So far, technically, we've been unable to get off our planet. We don't have the technology to fly out into the cosmos, nor do we have the science yet to understand how the universe may have come about. And if there is any logic to the universe, what exactly is it? You see, it's the logic of what the universe is actually doing is where the explanation of the planets and the life forms actually come from. It is the task, you might say, of our modern-day religions and belief structures to try to explain what the universe is doing, to try to explain the meaning of our lives. Scientists are also doing this. Every day they're working on unraveling the mysteries of the universe. They're trying to figure out how it started, how it's evolving, what it's actually doing. They're trying to provide answers to our questions about ourselves. So actually, religious leaders and scientists really aren't too far apart. They're really searching for answers to the same questions, just from slightly different perspectives. Scientists are trying to, you might say, the nuts and bolts guys, are trying to actually logically explain what the universe is doing and how our lives may fit into it, where religious leaders are more or less philosophical speaking trying to explain it, or theologically speaking trying to explain it. They're not concerned with the actual nuts and bolts. They're speaking from more of a spiritual standpoint. Well, unfortunately, neither our scientists nor our religious leaders have been well schooled, you might say, in the matrix of the universe, how it started, what a universe is. Is there really logic in the universe that controls our lives? Well, among the great Pleiadian information that Billy Meyer has been able to receive and understand, there's quite a bit of information on that. And it came in little pieces all throughout all of his contact notes. And if you've gone through all of those tapes, you'll notice that so far I really haven't spent too much time trying to explain much about creation, philosophy, theology, these things, because it was in different sections throughout the notes, so I tried to put it together all into two cohesive tapes. So not only can I explain it a little bit better, but hopefully my explanation then will be a little clearer and you'll have a better chance of understanding it than if I gave it to you in little pieces. Because I found out that throughout the entire context, they really answered most all of the big questions. On these two tapes you're about to listen to now, I'm going to explain a lot about what the Pleiadians have provided Billy with, the answers to the big questions. What is the universe? How did it start? Why is there a universe? Why are there life forms? And what is the meaning to our lives? And is there something beyond our physical lives? So that's the things we're going to talk about on these two tapes. So I almost warn you right now, whatever preconceived notions you may have, which are fine, about what you think life is and how it may have come about, you're probably going to be opened up to some new ideas on these two tapes there. I know I certainly was when I first heard all of this information. It made a lot of sense to me, and personally, I believe in all the concepts that the Pleiadians are stating here. It all makes very much sense to me. Quite a bit of it, most of it, seems very familiar, which is probably what drew me to a lot of this information to begin with. So anyway, for the sake of our discussion here, a creation is slightly different than what a universe is. And that will be explained as I tell you how a universe actually comes about. So let's back up to the very beginning and start there. You see, once we have the science and technology on our own society to actually leave the planet and go out and study the universe, we'll start answering a lot of questions. And as our science gets more developed, our technologies get better, we'll probably be able to actually move in time, move backward and forward, and watch cause and effect. Actually watch the universe unfold and see things happening. We also will come in contact with other races far more developed than ourselves. I'm sure there are many races out there like the Pleiadians, and many that we've never even heard anything about yet, which are far more advanced than we are, and already benefit from a greater time, space, and a far greater intelligence. So we have a lot to learn. Leaving our planet is like the first day of school for us as a race. So the things we're going to talk about here is probably a pretty good primer for our first day in school. My point is simply this, that the Pleiadians, as well as many other races who've already been out there, their technology has allowed them to study the universe and actually understand what's going on. In the case of the Pleiadians, it's even gone so far as to come in contact with other races far more developed than themselves, who are on the very throes of perfection of the life form, and have far more extensive understandings of the concept of a universe and the meaning of life than they do. So they're far more well-schooled than we are. The information on these tapes is the current Pleiadian philosophy of life and understanding of the universe. You see, the universe itself, the universe that we live in, we have no known parameters, you might say, or knowledge of its size and what it's actually doing. We believe the universe is expanding currently. That's the current theory for our scientists. And according to the Pleiadians, they are right. It is expanding. It will contract later on. Okay, let's start at the very beginning and explain exactly what a universe is and what a creation is. You see, our universe is not alone. There are many universes. As a matter of fact, the universe that we are living in is inside of a much larger universe, where it is estimated by the Pleiadian technology that there are 10 to the 49th power number of universes in this very large universe. 10 to the 49th power means if you took a pencil and sat down and made a 1 and then put 49 zeros out, that's the size of the number. Now that's a huge number. That's how many universes there are in this very large universe. And since there is no particular name for it, Billy has it marked down in his notes that the Pleiadians call it an absolutum. And that means that they have no knowledge beyond that. They have been able to move into some other universes and have gained some understanding of what the absolutum may do, but their knowledge is also very limited in that areas. But they have got far enough to find out that our universe, along with 10, with 49 zero number of other universes, exist in a much larger universe. And this very large universe, this absolutum, actually is doing something. It's evolving also. It's creating universes. And they have figured out that there are three stages to a universe. Okay, here's what happens. In the beginning, in this large absolutum that has 10 with 49 number of zeros of universes in it, when it goes to create a new universe, it has an idea to do that. The idea to create the new universe is called the creation. The creation is an idea. It is an idea embodied into itself with knowledge and understanding. So the absolutum, it is a living life form which has knowledge and understanding because it's already created many, many universes before us, so it knows how to create one. It has an idea to create another one. This idea, this little ball of energy that is embodied with the idea to create another universe, is called a creation. And so it does just that. And when it does it, this idea, and remember we talked earlier about all energy, the universe is either energy in a fine matter state or a coarse matter state. This creation is in what's called a fine matter state. Now again, if we have energy, such as electricity, things that are unseen, any types of energy, those are considered fine matter. If you have something in solid form, that's considered coarse matter. So a spiritual thought or a creational energy source is a fine matter, whereby a planet, an animal, or a person is a coarse matter, okay? Because we're going to relate to these terms all the way through many of these explanations. So the creation itself is a fine matter energy. It's very small. It's just a thought. It's a very small, like a flea, a little small piece of energy. But it has something unique. Because it's an idea from the absolutum, it already benefits from the knowledge of the absolutum, which has created other universes before. So it also, it's already very, very powerful as an energy source. The energy that is within this little small creation is actually moving in a very intricate, your exotic spiral formation. And in your exhibit, there's a drawing, as best as possible, a little bit about how that energy moves, the formation of that spiral. So it is in there. The idea to create a new universe is a creation, and the energy within it is moving in this egg form, spiral shape, and it's very small. The spiral is the original spiritual form, then, that will create our universe. The energy that's inside of this small spiral is now rotating. It rotates and it pulsates. Okay? What happens is, over a period of time, this idea, this creation that has the idea to create a universe, slowly evolves. It works out how and where it's going to do it by benefit of the knowledge it's received from the Absolutum. At a certain point, then, this creation then establishes the area where the universe is going to be. Now, picture in your mind, if you will, and there is a drawing in your exhibit called the Absolutum, which was just a quick idea to show you that there's a large universe called an Absolutum with a whole bunch of other universes in it. And what happens is, when our universe then, the creation decides to create a new universe, the area is established where our universe will be. And that's something similar to what the Big Bang Theory is. There is something like an explosion, they say, but there's no material or coarse matter that explodes. It's only fine matter. It's only energy. So the energy itself expands and creates an area in the Absolutum where the universe then is going to grow and evolve. The creation is doing this, and the creation, again, is just fine matter energy with the knowledge from the Absolutum. It has now created an area where the universe, where you and I live, is going to grow. However, there are no material things in it right now. It is of large size, but there's nothing in there but fine matter, just energy. There are no planets at this point, and there's no time involved. It's just energy that rotates in a spiral fashion. Now, the energy continues on now to learn and understand, and the creation gets the thoughts and ideas, understanding, and the sense of reason, and it comes up with the idea of life. Idea is the key word here, because as we're learning in science, all matter possibly was formed from an idea. Ideas, just like when you think, are formed by logical conclusion, and as the idea becomes more concentrated upon, it becomes to get stronger in energetic form, it can actually create solid material things. So, and this is how our universe has come about. The creation has created the universe and all of this material by the knowledge that was embodied within it. And now we have the giant area, our universe is growing, there are no planets in it yet, but it has thought, feeling, understanding, sense of reason, and an idea to create life. It then creates what's called space and time. In other words, the matrix then of our universe begins to become created. And we have a big empty universe with movement, because now we have the space, the emptiness, and it creates time. And it does this by virtue of an impulse it gets from the Absolutum. Our universe now continues to grow, and as it does so, belts or divisions begin to occur within this large area. Okay? What has happened now, our universe is glowing like a large, the word is Sohar, because this big energy form in the middle of our universe, which becomes like a central sun, is called by them a Sohar. And what it is a concentrated form of the knowledge of creation embedded into our universe. All of this knowledge that is growing on how to evolve the universe is in this central sun area. That is called the Sohar. It's like a bright light. And as our universe then continues to grow and expand, it will form belts, looking similar to like a tree trunk. And if you look at the exhibit there, you'll see that there are a certain number of belts, seven of them all together, is how our universe then separates. As time goes by and creation continues to use its knowledge and so forth and understanding to create this universe, slowly those belts start manifesting at different levels of evolution. And the third belt in is called the material belt, as you can see on the diagram. The outer belt is called the push belt, which separates it from the other universes. But the third belt in is where all of the planets, the coarse matter, is evolving. It's similar to like what an egg does. It has different layers in it. Only our universe is divided into seven layers. It is establishing already that there are seven levels, seven different types of energy in our universe. And they all have different things that they do. Each level of energy has different understanding, different knowledge, and different purpose. So the logic of the universe is beginning to be established by virtue of this creational idea. this embodied idea that is creating all of this material. Okay? So this continues on to a point where there is a material belt. And in this material belt, unlike any of the other belts, in here now, the energy matter, the fine matter, begins to get thicker and thicker, denser or denser. If you can imagine nothing, and then energy, and what would energy be as it gets a little bit denser? Well, there was no word for it in the German language, so Billy decided to call it fluffy matter. So before it becomes gas, it's what's called fluffy matter. First, there is the thought of the creation. The thought gets thicker, more dense, and more dense, and turns into fluffy matter. And eventually, the fluffy matter then evolves into gaseous states, which are going to form all of our suns and planets through nebulae. Okay? At this particular point, something very important happens, though, in our universe. Once our universe has established a material belt, then time begins. Up until that point, there is no time in the universe, because time only acts upon material objects, coarse matter objects, all right? And this time impulse somehow comes into our universe then, by via the creation, from some source of the universe that created us. One universe creates another. There are cycles to universes. So our universe has now evolved to the point where it has a material belt, and time is beginning. When time starts, time is an energy force that moves like waves. It's divided into small units of impulses which speed through the universe in waves. This causes the rotation and animation of the matter. Moving time is now born, and the motion of creation is now started. Creation is creating a universe, we call it, with seven different layers, seven different, they're calling it belts, seven different stages of evolutionary material, each stage having its own function, the fifth stage now having the function of creating material or coarse matter form that we come along. And the reason I draw this point out again is that pay attention to the logic of what the creation is doing to make the universe, because these same principles that are being set in motion pertain to our life. Okay, which we're going to get into a little bit later. Okay, so the idea of creation then is continued by the eternity of what's called the Ur from the original creation, or this absolutum. Spiritual energies are now moving, they're rotating, fluffy matters turning into gas. Gases then form, condense over billions and billions of years. And what happens, of course, is what we're aware of now, that these gases then, in these large areas of our universe called nebula, we form into suns, planets are formed and cooled down, and they form into solar systems. Nothing unusual about this. We're all aware from school the slow evolution of what our universe actually does. At this particular time in our development, though, we still have this fluffy matter, and I just want to point out at that stage of development there, though, which time has started, time then causes all of this fluffy matter then to start moving. These waves or impulses of time that move through the fluffy matter is how the galaxies and the motion of the universe actually gets started. Because time creates movement, it creates rotation and pulsation of the fluffy matter. And so that's the reason, and by the way, these waves of impulses move in the spiral form that's in your exhibit there, in that particular shape. That's why there's no edge to the universe, because the energies all move in this spiral fashion, and they never really come to an end of anything. They're like a continuous movement that keeps moving on. Time, the clock as we think of it then, started way back when. Billions of years ago then, even trillions of years ago, when this impulse of time came into our material belt, that's when the clock started ticking. So from that point on, the impulses of time are animating the matter, and the time machine started. And the concept, technology, whatever, of moving in time is the understanding of how these pulses work in the coarse matter world. Time travel then can be reduced simply to the understanding of the impulses of the time factor, where you can actually move up and down these pulses and see matter at different stages of development, which is time traveling. Okay? At this point, though, we have no firmament. There's no stars floating around. That's what happens next. The fluffy matter then rotates, pulsates into spirals, which resemble the egg shape of the original form of this spiral. And that continues on. At that point, though, it's a dark universe because we don't have anything except the central sun, but the universe itself is dark. So if we were to see it at that point, it'd just be black, unless we were close enough just to see the central part. The fluffy matter then evolves into galaxies and begins to show very brightly, causing the darkness of space to be broken. Also, it starts warming it up, because as all of this fluffy matter evolves into gas, the gas becomes more and more condensed and starts creating all of these suns. The suns start putting off great amount of energy. We have electrical magnetic radiation then moving through the universe, starting to affect other coarse matter. This is the beginning then of where astrology would start. And we have heat now. Up till this point, it's probably been pretty cold in the emptiness of space. But logic is being set in pattern here, because every step of the way, all of the fine matter and the coarse matter of the universe have attained their level that they are at through reasoning and understanding. And this is forming the logic exactly of what the universe is, and is laying down, if you will, the laws or the commandments or whatever you want to call them, of what existence is all about. You see, man doesn't come along and establish the rules of the universe. We don't make the laws of creation. The laws, if you want to call them that, are nothing more than the logic of how the universe is working, how the universe came about. And this is how it came about. So it's setting in pattern this numbering of seven layers of development. And the logic then of what life and how life will evolve is being established at these very times as the universe is being created from the idea of the creation. Okay, the evolution will continue. And of course, as the suns begin to evolve and come into being, so do the planets, who cool down. Their matter will cool down. They fall into formation around the suns. And I'm not going to elaborate here on astronomy and those things, because that's not the purpose here. I'm much more interested in just the development of the fine matter or spiritual world and an explanation of how our lives fit into the logic of the universe. So as we would move through then trillions of years of time, the universe itself is going to evolve. The planets will solidify, cool down, become solid. And then, of course, what happens next is the evolution of flora, which is air, water, and the plants and so forth, and all the million different forms within nature begin to evolve. Important to note, though, that all throughout nature, as all of this food kingdom, if you want to call it that, starts to be evolved, over billions of years that will take, the logic of the universe is being used here in every step of the way. Every time a plant is evolving and being created, it is being done so with the logic that was provided originally by the creation, that embodied idea that is still the original map or idea that's causing everything to work. My point simply is to keep clear all throughout that there is definite logic and understanding to what the universe is doing, and that it is following exactly, as the Pleiadians are telling us, these levels of seven stages of development all of the way through. And this also, man will mimic and follow this same stages of development that the universe is doing. After the food kingdom, of course, has evolved, since the universe is not totally stupid, you have to have food before you can have animals who eat food. So once the universe understands through the knowledge of creation, exactly at this point you can start seeing where a creation and a universe are really the same thing. A creation, what Pleiadians call the original idea to create a universe, actually is. But all throughout this, creation then basically is the fine matter energy which creates a universe. Okay? So creation and universe start to become kind of synonymous here as this thing, and for the rest of the explanation it really will become the same thing, because creation is an idea that grows into being a universe. At this point now, the logic of creation has understood how to make the food kingdom. It has the idea of life, and it has learned that first it must create food so that there can be creatures to eat it. Fauna, which is the animal kingdom, comes along. And, of course, the animal kingdom now is an entirely different level of spiritual energy. It is a different level. It's following the seven levels of development that are established within the matrix of the universe or creation itself. And each one of those seven levels is broken down to seven other levels with seven subgroupings under that. So in the Pleiadian science, they've been able to map out entirely all these different levels of development of the creation itself. And through time travel and knowledge from other races, they've learned to understand each incremental step that a creation goes through in its evolution. Because this original idea of creation is doing exactly that. It is an idea that is evolving. Probably not so much different than just an idea that each one of you may have at any given moment. That idea is set in motion. It does not just die out. All of your thoughts and ideas have life to them. And when concentrated and thought on hard enough, they are manifested in greater and greater energy. And even us little humans can think to the point that we can cause creations, that we can create matter to actually happen. Because matter is nothing more than the following through of a logical idea. Okay? As long as it's logical and makes sense. So don't go out there creating illogical universes. At the point that it's necessary or logical to create the animal kingdom, then creation does that. It has the idea, then creates the energy forms to create the animal kingdom, which are coarse matter beings. Nature reacts differently than the humans do. After the animal kingdom has been evolved and goes to a certain point of stage, there gets to be a point in the stage of development of the creation then where logically it can create human life. And there's quite a bit of difference between the human life and the nature life. Humans evolve naturally out of the dead animal tissue in plants. There's a mixture. Scientifically, that's how it actually works. When the fine matter gets to the point of understanding and knowledge where it can create a human being, that's how it does it. The first human being on a planet where the life acids and so forth are correct around a certain kind of sun where it's possible for human life to develop, that's how it is done. The knowledge is provided by the fine matter energy of creation. The coarse matter provides the body material for the first human being to be born. And that is done through an understanding of the mixing together of dead animal tissue and plants. So humans are a spirit form that have come out of the idea of creation. We were created then through the logic of the creation, creating this thing we call a universe in logical steps. So there's a part piece of creation in all of us. And that part piece is an understanding of what the creation is. We are connected to it because we are a spirit form which is derived from the spiritual energy which is creation. Humans are totally separate from the flora and fauna kingdoms. We have nothing, no connection with the animal kingdom or the food kingdom. You were never a plant. You were never an animal of any type. You are a separate level of evolution. Just as the plant kingdom, the flora kingdom, has its limitations. When the idea for the flora kingdom to be evolved, it has a beginning level of evolution, and it has a high level of evolution. It can only evolve to a certain point. The same with nature. It's a different kind of spiritual energy. It has its levels of evolution also. It has a low level of evolution that is necessary to be attained on a planet before the animal kingdom can naturally evolve and become into existence. And it can only evolve so highly. Animals can never evolve to the point that humans can. We are a different kind of spiritual energy because human forms, spirit forms, can evolve into what's called perfection, which will be explained a little bit later on. In other words, the human being is capable of evolving to a much higher level than an animal can. An animal has limitations. An animal spirit is different. As we'll discuss a little later, it reincarnates differently on a different time schedule and works differently than the human form does. So be comfortable. You were never a flea, a dog, or a snake, or anything like that. Okay, but it was necessary for our planet to evolve naturally through these levels of evolution before it was possible then for the human being to evolve on his own. So man then begins to develop and evolve. Words are formed into language. We go through our very simple steps of evolution, and then man comes in and develops to the higher forms of perfection. In our galaxy, which we call the Milky Way, Originally in our galaxy, it has been learned by the Pleiadians through association with other races, that originally in our galaxy, when it formed a long time back, there were a little over 44 million different planets where human life, as we know it, evolved naturally on its own. Now, there are countless numbers of sun systems and planets in our Milky Way. But originally, left alone, there was 44 million planets similar to Earth, where there was the necessary acids, atmosphere, environmental control, suns, and so forth, necessary for a man to evolve. That happened. Of this 44 million, it has grown greatly because the galaxy itself is quite old. They have now learned that there are 343 variations to the human form that they have discovered. This is variations in fingers, toes, size, bone structure, eyes, nose, so forth. Slight variations in the human form itself, but all nonetheless of the same spiritual type of energy. They can strive for perfection and evolve to perfection within creation. At the moment that they know of, there are over 7,800,000,000 known planets in our galaxy with human life on them. So that original 44 million that evolved on its own has greatly expanded. Of course, that's mostly because the 44 million evolved, became technically advanced, and then went out, moved out into the galaxy, and seeded other planets also. So here we are, we're moving along, you and I, in on our own little planet, not really aware, factually, of what's going on out in the universe, and now we're finding out that we're kind of on the late freight, that the universe has been going on for a long time, the galaxy's quite old, and before our little civilization came along, there literally have been billions of other civilizations just in our galaxy that are far older than we are. So we have to look forward to quite a family of man out there to learn, meet, and understand from. Okay, before we go a little farther, a few more explanations on the creation itself and how it actually evolves, in other words, the continued logic of the creation, and then we'll get more into the development of our human life forms. Okay, I mentioned earlier that our universe, and if you looked at the exhibit, is divided into seven different belts or seven different layers of kinds of energy. And then, intricately enough, each one of those different layers of the creation itself are subdivided into different levels of knowledge and understanding also. So the creation actually is a great big, huge thought of knowledge. It's a large idea that once was small and is evolving into a very large area. At least we think of it as large. But on the scale of some other microcosm, it's probably infinitely small. What happens to our creation? Well, let me give you a few more ideas about the creation of ourself, and then we will kind of pay a little bit more attention to our own human development. I said originally that once our creation was established, that the outer belt of it, if we could, for instance, take our creation, and we suddenly became the incredible enlarged person ourselves and grew much larger than the universe so we could see the thing, we would look at our creation and see that it is egg-shaped, that it has followed the form of the original idea of creation, which was an egg-form spiral. And as it has bursted into a large area and the Sohar has expanded it, as all of this has happened, it has maintained the general shape. So let's say our creation, as we're looking at it, looks like a big egg. Now let's take a knife and let's slice that egg right in half. And we'll take the top off and just set it aside. And as we look down now at the inside of the creation we're looking at, and again, creation now and universe are the same thing at this point, what we see is it looks like kind of like a tree trunk with different rings in it, and that's these belts that I'm talking about. The outer edge is called a push belt, and that's because it pushes against the other universes. It not only keeps other energies and coarse matter from coming into ours, but it also serves the purpose of keeping our energies from going out and getting involved with other universes. So it's like a separator. It's like a skin on an egg, if you want to call it that. The first layer there is called a creation belt. And this is just a name that is given to it by the Pleiadians, as they explained it to Billy. The main purpose, apparently, of the creational belt, which is a very highly evolved form of energy, it creates what's called the changing belt, which is the second belt in. Now, the functions of the changing belt, as I understand it, frankly, are to serve in the evolution of the material belt, which is next. And it is this material belt that you're looking at here, which is where all of the planets are. That is the only belt of the creation that has coarse matter in it. The coarse matter, again, being anything that is solid. There's also a fourth, third, second belts, which are strictly fine matter belts, or creational or spiritual energy, all meaning the same thing. And then, of course, the central Sohar of the universe, sometimes called the central sun, and that is the origin, then, of the creational embodied idea. It has grown into that. So that's what our universe actually looks like when you actually look at it. As a matter of fact, one of the scientific secrets for figuring out space travel is right here on this diagram. We live in a material belt where there is time. Only the material belt has the time energy in it. And think of time as an energy. It's a wave of energy that moves in pulses through our material belt in this spiral formation. That's why we have rotation, movement, animation of matter in the material belt that does not exist in the other belts. Well, the Pleiadians say one of the first forms of figuring out how to move in time is how to take energy, coarse matter, which can only exist in this this material belt, move it out of the material belt into the changing belt. In the changing belt, there are no impulses of time. There is no coarse matter. That's one reason is coarse matter doesn't exist there. So there's a way, apparently, of taking a flying device, moving it out of the material belt, moving it into the changing belt. It's no longer in a solid material form. It's been converted to some other form of matter which can exist in the changing belt. But now it's outside of time. It's no longer, in touch with the time pulses. So it can move in time. And once the knowledge is understood of how the pulses of time work, you can go into the changing belt, move your flying device, however your programming is, then re-enter the material belt at some other place and kind of jump back onto the time wave impulse as it's moving through this spiral shape through creation, and you're in a different time. So that's one way of actually doing it. Okay, a little more information about our own creation here. As our creation continues to evolve, there will be no more material belts. It is only this one. Because the creation, this is how it evolves. Now, interestingly enough, I talked earlier about that there are seven levels. There's a little bit more to this. As the creation itself continues to evolve, it is now expanding and sending energies all out, all through itself, which is called a universe. It will go through stages of development. And those development stages are the process of evolving fine matter into coarse matter, which facilitates the evolution of the creation itself. You see, as creation gets an idea for a plant, an animal, or a human, that plant, animal, or human then, in its coarse matter state, in its material form, itself gathers information, learning, and wisdom. And it is that learning, experience, and wisdom which contributes to the evolution then of the creation. Because just like the creation, and being a small part of the creation, it then is thinking. And what's thinking? Thinking is the creation of an idea, isn't it? And what's an idea? An idea is the formation of logic. What is matter? If you take logic and concentrate it, at a certain point it becomes matter. Okay, so all of us as physical beings, the animals, the plants, everything that is existing because of the idea that the fine matter world had to create it, is now evolving on and contributing more ideas, more energy to the spiritual fuel, you might want to call it, or evolution of the creation itself. So we're all little small parts of the creation. Everything is. A tree, a squirrel, an animal, a planet, a moon, everything is. They are all part of the natural, intelligent, logic evolution of the creation itself. Hence, you can start to see what responsibility that we have as little minute creatures and spirit forms of the creation, why we have to start taking the entire creation itself into considerations of respect. Not something that we're doing well on this planet at this point. Up to now, we've been looking at the planet as something that we can just plunder and do whatever we want with. We dig holes in it and drag the oil and gas out of it. We dig holes in it. We blow it up. We do whatever we want because we just look at it as a dumb old piece of dirt or something that we're living on. We have no respect for it, and we have no respect for it because we have no understanding of why it's important. We don't know at this point what the creation is doing. So hopefully, knowledge that the Pleiadians are providing us with through Billy will get out into the world and people will become more and more aware of the respect that we need to have for creation, and we can move towards a better understanding of how to live in harmony with it. Well, anyway, our creation is going to continue evolving. It will go through all these levels of growth, of different levels of evolution, of creating suns and planets and flora and fauna and people. All of these things continuing to evolve, providing the evolution of the creation. At a certain point, the creation itself, or the universe as we're calling it also, will pull back into itself. Now, this is pretty fascinating. You see, so far, the universe has been out there just growing. Okay? And it's been doing that, actually, for 47 trillion years. That's right. The creation that we are living in is 47 trillion years since that original embodied idea decided to create this universe that we are in, this creation that we are living in. Now, we have no way of tracking that because the material or coarse matter, part of the universe is not nearly that old. So, since our science at the moment can only track something in material form, we have no idea how old that the creation really is. When, in fact, our creation will go through a total lifespan of 311 trillion 40 billion years. That will be the entire lifespan of the creation that we are in. This creation is gone through so far 47 trillion years of that, which is about one-sixth of the way through its cycle. In your exhibits, there's also a little drawing there showing that there are seven levels of development to a creation. A creation will go through this 311 trillion year cycle of expansion, evolution, and then it contracts and pulls back into itself. At that point, the creation then goes into kind of a sleep stage, you might call it. It's now cogitating all the things that it has learned. It's in a sleep state. And then again, it will repeat the same cycle that it did. It will now have more knowledge than it did before because it's more evolved. It is now benefited from the experience and wisdom of all of its spirit form parts, which is all of the flora, fauna, and human kingdom throughout the entire creation. Since its inception for trillions of years, it has benefited from all of that knowledge. And now it's going to do it again. And it will go through again, create another universe. It will go through more advanced stages of development. It will again create planets, suns, flora, fauna, and the human kingdom. And it will evolve all the way through a cycle again. And once again, it will pull back together into a sleep stage. The universe that we live in is called a creational universe because it creates human life. It creates beings like ourselves that do evolve, and that's its mechanism of evolution. Its mechanism, its method by which it evolved is to create small life forms, bit parts of itself, that go out and do, experience, think, form logic, and contribute to it the whole of its evolution. So it's called a creational universe. It will go through seven cycles of creating itself in universe form and sleeping in between. So it's life and death, more or less. It's off and it's on. There's a creation, there's an expansion, there's a contraction, there's a sleep period. Okay? It does this seven times, and then it changes, kind of a metamorphosis, into another kind of universe. After it has done this seven times, this mechanics of creating material belts and creating different kinds of life forms which contribute to its evolution, that mechanics will be done seven times, and then it's turned into, you might say, it itself evolves into a different kind of universe called an Ur universe, U-R. Okay? And then an Ur universe also will go through seven cycles of growth, but it's different. It doesn't go through the material belt process. Ur universes are fine matter, all the way through all the time, but they have a specific function. Ur universes create other creational universes. They're kind of like the mother universes, okay? And this is where the process, logic, and understanding of birth comes from. Within the creation, it knows how to create other coarse matter beings. So our creational universes know this, evolve into an Ur universe. Ur universes go through 7 stages of developing other creational universes. Okay, and then after an Ur universe goes through its 7 levels of its own evolution of learning and understanding how to create entirely new universes to start off, new creational ideas, it then evolves into what's called a central universe. Very little is known about a central universe, and the Pleiadians have only figured out these 3 stages. It's quite possible there may be other stages of development also of the universes, but none is known yet. It's quite possible there will probably be 7 levels altogether because the universe, the creation so far, seems to revolve totally around 7s all the way through. It evolves in 7 levels. It itself goes through 7 stages of development. Each level of coarse matter life that is within the creation, whether it's animal, plant, or human, goes through 7 stages of development, which we're going to spend a little more time on in a minute talking about the 7 stages of development of the human life. So universes, or creations, go through basically 3 stages of evolution that the Pleiadians know about so far. These simple universes, like we are in, of creating material belts, then Ur universes, and that also evolve. I was just explaining how the creations work, that they do go through 7 stages of development. They do evolve then into a different kind of universe called an Ur universe, which creates other creational types like we're in. That then goes through 7 stages of development and evolves into a central universe. Now, we are in the creational universe that we are in. We'll go through 7 stages of development. We are in the first stage of that development, and we're in the 47th trillion year of that. So our creation has a few years to go, over 250 trillion here to go, it looks like, and then it will collapse back into itself. So that's quite a bit of time. We don't have anything really to worry about there. We're in the very first stage of these 7 stages of development. So our universe, our creation, same thing, has quite a bit of ways to go before it finishes its own personal cycle of growth here and grows into being a universe. Okay, let's move into an area that's a little bit more personal now for you and I. Let's discuss about how the evolution of the human being form actually comes about and what it's doing within the creation. We've learned now that the creation itself is going to go through 7 stages of development, that originally it was an idea that created what we call this universe. So it has brought with it the knowledge from wherever before, the previous universe that created this one. Some Ur universe someplace created ours. So it had already evolved through all the things that we've done. The point is that creations themselves can't just go out and instantly make a universe. It just doesn't happen instantly. It evolves very, very slowly through wisdom and intelligence every step of the way, learning how to create all of the infinite small particles of itself. It's taking it trillions of years to get to this point right now where we're at. It took it that long to figure out how to take the fluffy matter and create it into gas, to create the gas into suns and planets, to create the food kingdom, then the animal kingdom and us. Every stage along the way, it had to earn that through experience. Now, I'm sure included in all that experience, there has been a lot of mistakes made, a lot of trial and error that the creation itself has to go through. It has to figure out how to do everything. The knowledge, creation's knowledge, is stored within itself in what's called this fine matter world. Sometimes people call the fine matter world spiritual energy or creational energy. That's fine. We're talking about the same thing here. The Pleiadians use the term fine matter to describe any kind of etheric or energy form, and coarse matter, once again, to describe anything that's solid that's been created out of the knowledge of some fine matter someplace. Okay? So actually, everything that exists in the creation is a combination of coarse matter and fine matter. That there is fine matter somehow involved in its atomic structure, that help create the material matter and is part of the mapping or the knowledge that makes it exist. So matter, for the most part, then, is just ideas that are manifested into solid form. Okay? So now let's see how the human being comes along here. We're in a universe where trillions of years have gone by. The creation itself has figured out how to evolve, how to establish itself within this great absolutum. And it's figured out how to develop and evolve through these different stages. And it gets to the point now where it's going to create the first human being on the first planet someplace. That happens. I'm sure a certain amount of experimentation went into that. This first guy must have been quite a sight. If he was created out of dead animal tissue and plants, I can just imagine what this guy looked like. But the point is that this guy didn't know very much. The fine matter energy that figured out how to create him probably didn't know any more than except how to actually create a body and build a brain and put some information in it. At this point, his intelligence is very low because he has no experiences. And experiences in life, experiences in the physical form, is how we gather information. Now, the reason for the material life is to gather information with your physical senses, experience, create logic and thoughts, create conclusions, and as you experience things, you contribute wisdom to your spirit, to this fine matter energy which created you originally. See, we aren't material beings having one life. That's just our personality. That's just our persona, we think of it. That's our conscious mind in the material state. That's, you know, who we think we are. We're Randolph, we're Nancy, we're Bob, we're Larry, whoever we are. That's a passing phenomenon. We are really spiritual beings, fine matter energy forms, that go through a series of material lives on purpose in order to experience and to gather information. Because it's the spirit, then, that moves on. It never dies. It never sleeps. It is a continuous form of energy in creation, which is striving for perfection. Striving for perfection means that in itself, it needs to gather all the information it can so it can also get back at one with the creation itself. It's a part piece of creation now because it was created out of creation and is still connected to it somewhat. But it needs to strive for perfection and rejoin with creation itself. We are the highest form of life form in the creation. Plants and animals, planets themselves, fluffy matter, gas, and other things can only evolve up to a certain point. So there are stages of energies in the creation. We are the highest stage of level of energy in the creation itself. And that's why we say we strive for perfection, because unlike all the other stages before us, they can only reach a certain level and that's it. We are the final stage that evolves into being again with the creation itself, which is what I'm going to go through now and explain all about our levels of development and how we get there. And it'll start making more sense to you. So we have our first guy who's come along here, been created out of dead animal tissue and plants. He's a really good-looking guy. He has practically no knowledge at all. And unlike the animal kingdom, which has instinct, where it is born into it with certain knowledges that its spirit has, certain knowledges that it puts into it for survival, the human being doesn't. He's at the very low level of his development now. He really just has no wisdom to fall back on at all. You see, as we go through material lives, the wisdom that we gain from experiences is stored in the fine matter world in our spirit. And that is carried forward so we have access to it in the following life. So as we go through numerous multiple material lives, we start gaining wisdom from all of our experiences. And as we gain that wisdom, the spirit remembers it, and in your next material life you have access, or you might say the usage of that. That's what determines your intelligence and your ability and your aptitudes as you move forward and begins to explain why we're all slightly different. You see, we're all on different paths, different understanding, and different things we're learning about. Okay, if we were on a Pleiadian world and we're attending class there and wanted to learn about these seven developmental stages of human life forms, then that's what I'm going to go over right now. Billy Meyer was given a, you might say, a listing or a kind of a printout of the seven different levels of human life within creation. Since creation itself has created its own laws, you might say, or logic, by virtue of its development, its evolution. It has figured out how to create a universe, how to create the fluffy matter, the gaseous material, and so forth. So it has earned the right, or learned all the way along on the different stages of development of different kinds of life. And the human life form is no different than anything else. It also must conform to the logic of creation. And so there is a logical, you might say, progression of development of the human life form as it goes through its evolutionary processes. So there are really kind of like laws of logic or rules, you might say, because there is a fixed order of logic on how we develop. When we come into our first lifetime, we have no previous knowledge. We haven't lived at all yet. We have no experiences, so we have no accumulated knowledge. So we really don't know much of anything. And I imagine our first guy that came along probably didn't live very long. He probably was just, you know, snuffed out by an animal right away or whatever, and probably didn't live too long. Short lifespan, no knowledge how to take care of himself. So I'm going to go through this prepared list, which was made for Billy, which explains the different levels of development. It explains all seven levels, seven steps of development of the human life, and breaks it down a little bit in seven different steps. So there are seven levels to the development of the human life form. Five of those levels are in physical form. Two of those levels are in non-physical forms. And then we return and become part of creation. So I'm going to explain the different seven levels. By the way, each one of these seven levels is broken down into seven sub-levels, and then seven below that, seven below that. So it's seven across and then seven sub-levels down. But we won't have time and we won't break it down that far here. I'm just going to talk about the main seven breakdowns or levels of the development of human life. In the first level, it's called primary life. Obviously so, because it's the very beginnings. So your first material life would be called the primary development of the intellect and the spirit. So that's the first thing that has to happen. There is no development at that point in your first lifetime. You have no knowledge from any previous lifetimes. It's the first one. So it's the primary development, or the very beginning of development of your intellect, using your brain, using your logical patterns. I suppose at this point the first person is just trying to figure out how to walk, to get around, to find food, maybe some sort of shelters, whatever. So the process is that we go through a material life. While we were going through the material life, we gather information and experiences with our senses, sight, feel, touch, smell, and so forth. We make logical decisions. When we make logical decisions that become part of our life, when we decide on something and that becomes part of us, we gain wisdom from that. And that information, that cognition, that understanding of a basic thing that becomes part of us, then that wisdom from that goes into our spirit. Not every logical conclusion that you come to goes into your spirit, because the spirit itself, remembered, is a bit piece, a part piece of creation. It is connected to creation, whether you're aware of it or not. And it has the ability to, you might say, check out your conclusions and compare it against the logic of creation to see if it's correct. If it's incorrect, if it's illogical, if it's harmful to the spirit, it does not accept it. It actually refuses it. After we go through these seven levels of human development, and later on in the tape, I'm going to go over the actual mechanics in the mind and in the spirit, how it retains thoughts and how that works, and we'll discuss that a little bit more. But right now, let me go through these seven different steps of development of the human life and explain what these steps are. The second step would be the primary thinking of intellect and spirit. So to begin with, first of all, in your first stages, you have to learn how to think basically at all, to use your brain in the very basic functions. That may take several lifetimes. You might not live very long. This stage, you don't have enough intelligence probably to even protect yourself very well. So your first few lifetimes are probably rather brief. As a matter of fact, the first 100 or so may be very brief. And before you start being able to rationally think things out, the third level, section of primary life is the primary thinking of reason, or reason. Okay, first we're developing some intelligence, then we're going to start thinking, and now we're reasoning things out. We're figuring things out, like, okay, I better not get too close to that large animal because he will kill me. Okay. Fourth step under primary life is the primary exercise of intellect and spiritual force. Okay. The fifth step is primary reasonable actions. So here you're figuring out, you're developing reasoning. Now, it may have taken a couple thousand lifetimes to even get to this point where you're actually beginning to use reasoning and thinking and so forth to understand how to take care of your life. Each one of these lifetimes you go through, we contribute very little in the form of spiritual growth. Spiritual growth is the actual wisdom retained by the Spirit as a result of experiences in the material life. You'll go completely through a material life. It's possible to go clear through it and practically learn nothing. Many people live kind of in spiritual stagnation, completely unaware of their spirit at all, and leading the kind of life that contributes nothing. So it may take them hundreds of lifetimes to progress hardly anything at all. The idea behind this list is that all of these levels, types of things, must be gone through. That the human being can't skip anything. Each human being who goes through his own cycles of life, we may start off the same with, it's kind of like a hard drive on a computer with nothing on it, then we start adding software. Well, our spirit is much like that. As we go through each lifetime, it gathers a little bit of wisdom, but everybody lives their lifetime differently. So we're all out gathering wisdom, experiencing things, and contributing wisdom to our spirit about different information at different times. So each person coming into life has different objectives, has different things, different paths that he is on of learning. So even though we start off the same, within a very few short lifetimes, we're all working on different things, but we don't get to bypass anything. The idea is that there are X amount of things that have to be learned about life and contribute, and we're all going to go through them at one time or another, just not at the same time. Okay, the seven breakdowns of primary life then. One was primary development of the intellect. Two was primary thinking of the intellect. Three is primary thinking and reasoning. Four is the primary exercise of intellectual and spiritual force. Five was the primary reasonable actions. Six is the primary will caused, it says, will cause thinking. So we have an individual here now is starting to use his own will. Seventh is the reason-conditioned leading of the life. We have an individual here now who's least able to control himself and take care of his life. He can think, he can reason, and he can take care of himself. So this is still a very underdeveloped person. Creatures at this level of development are, usually thought of as being insane or idiots. Their spirits and intellects are really just, not very developed at all, which they have to learn an awful lot to get going. And again, we only add very little to each lifetime as far as spiritual growth as we go through. So just to get through the primary life may take several million years. The second step of development in the human life is called the reasoned life. And that's broken down into seven levels also. Each one of those seven is also broken into seven, which we won't go into. But reasoned life is the second level of development of human life. And this refers to those cycles of life, those lifetimes you're going to lead, where your reasoning really figures in the development or evolution of your spiritual self. The first level in reasoned life is called primary development of reason. This is the very beginning of scratching our head and going, how about that? To figure these things out. Let's think things through, okay? The second level is the effective realization of reason and her use. Well, we're getting results. We're going through a lifetime now, we're trying to figure things out, and we're starting to recognize a little bit the cause and effect of things. That, gee, what about this? Or if that, and if I think this way, this happens. So we have an individual here reasoning, trying to figure out how to cope with his life by virtue of reasoning. The third level of reasoned life is the primary acknowledgement and cognition of higher influences. So at this level, it's probably the first time our guy here is coming to the realization that, there may be more intelligent, higher life forms out there somewhere. There could actually be something more intelligent out there. Maybe something really did create life. Okay? The fourth level is the belief of higher influences without owning any knowledge about it. Now, this would be at the development stages where people are developing belief concepts. They're believing maybe in a sun god or a rain god or a river god or whatever, a god, a leader. They start looking for answers to themselves. They're starting to try to define the meaning of life. We're creating belief concepts. But they really don't know what they're talking about, is the general idea, because they don't have the knowledge, the wherewithal, or the spiritual growth to look within to really learn. See, the interesting part is that at all times of development throughout all of this, there is a spirit in there that is connected to creation, but the material self does not have the conscious knowledge or ability to be able to use the spirit to actually get in touch with creation for the understanding. It takes a while, many, many lifetimes, before the individual actually learns to understand the fact that, yee, I do have a spirit, and I can use this spiritual self to actually learn more about creation and about life. And, well, what do you know? I can use my spirit actually to help my material life. That will set in eventually, but not at this point. Okay, the fifth step of reasoned life is the belief of higher forces, superstition, fear of evil, veneration of good, etc. It's time for, this is a germination time, it says, for religions and etc. To come into power. You know, we're starting to form beliefs. We think this might be the way it works. And we form religions. But we really don't know the answer yet. The sixth level of reasoned life is the primary recognition of real reality. Research, position of real truths. First, spiritual cognitions and their use. Spiritual curing, telepathy, etc. Now, this is considered by the Pleiadians to be the present position of the average Earth human being. So let's go over that again, the average Earth human being. By the way, we're also told at this point that the average Earth human being is 60 to 80 million years old as a spirit form. Okay? So if you take 60 million years and divide that maybe by an average lifespan of 30, 40 years, you can see that by this time we've had an awful lot of material lives just to get up to this point. Okay, again, that level was the primary recognition of reality, research of real knowledge, first spiritual cognitions. That means we're just at the point, many of us are just at the point where we're beginning to understand and are quite sure we really do have a spiritual self, that we're more than just a material being, that there's more to us. Our first spiritual curings and so forth. Here they're talking about that we're understanding that if we have a spirit, well, possibly it's useful. Maybe there's something we can do with this spiritual self, that we can develop some sort of force with the spirit where it could be useful for better health. Perhaps it's useful for communicating. Well, maybe it's even useful to try to get information from other life forms. Maybe it's useful to try to get in touch with creation or God or whatever we think of as God. Maybe that's entirely possible. Now, this is exactly about where the average Earth human being is. Matter of fact, most of them, I'm afraid a lot of them aren't quite to this level, but this is where the Pleiadians see the average Earth human being at this point. The seventh level of development of reasoned life is called the primary development of knowledge and wisdom. So this would be an area here where development of knowledge and wisdom, where we are actually looking for real facts. We're trying to find out what wisdom really is. The third step of development of human life is called the intellect life. Okay? Now, our first was primary life. The second is reasoned life, where we learn to think. The third is intellectual life. We're starting to intellectualize things. We're actually coming to conclusions, forming logic. Okay, intellect life. It's broken also into seven levels. The first level is called the high development of the intellect, high technology, second utilization of spiritual forces, and primary creation of living forms. Okay, well, now we have some intelligence in our being here, besides just having reasoning faculties. We're using our intellect here. We're developing high intelligence, which we are. Well, many of our people these days, scientists are, and a lot of young children are coming along with great intelligence. It's surprising how bright some of these kids are that are born these days. So, high technology. Yes, we do have high technology. We're learning more and more about the atom, molecules, the secrets of nature. We're developing now systems which will enable us technically to leave our solar system and explore the universe. So we are certainly moving into times of high technology. Second, utilization of spiritual forces. I would say you could probably define that in the New Age community. that people are searching for. They are trying out. They are trying to discover what can be done with spiritual forces. We're aware now that things like telepathy and so forth are possible, that the spiritual self somehow does have an effect on the material life, that a person who understands more and more about the spirit itself is somehow better connected to the life force of the universe. We're becoming aware of that. And we're also becoming aware that because you are more of a spiritual person, that somehow life just seems to get a little better. These people seem to be a little luckier. They seem to be healthier. They seem to live a little longer. We're finding these things out. The second level of intellectual life is the realization and exercise of knowledge. Exercise of knowledge, okay. Truth and wisdom. And also, slow breakup of acceptances of belief. Belief is when you believe something might be true, but you don't have the facts. Now, that's very common. But more and more, we're learning more facts about things. So our belief systems, our old mythical belief systems, are breaking down. And we see that already in 1992. Less people are turning to belief structures of all types to answer today's problems. We are evolving more and more into a more sophisticated world where old belief systems do not provide the answers to today's problems. This present position right here, they say, is the present position of the educated Earth human beings, scientists, etc., leading-edge thinkers, and so forth. Probably most of you listening to this tape would fall into that category. You are seekers of truth and wisdom, and you're listening to this tape hoping that you might find some little pearl of information or knowledge that you might need just at this moment to move yourself on down your own path of evolution. And that's exactly why you're listening to the tape, because not only do we have to feed our material body, and we have to feed ourselves at lunch, we have to feed our spirit with knowledge also. And most of you listening to this tape are probably feeling the need to feed your spiritual knowledge. You're looking for answers to things, just like I have looked the past few years, and I find it very interesting to share it because it's not only part of my own growth, but I'm quite sure that the things that we're talking about here are the beginning, definitely, of breakup of belief structures and the beginning of wisdom and truth. We're moving that direction. The third level of the intellectual life is the first utilization of knowledge and wisdom. Okay. Well, we're seeing more and more people who have not only discovered that the spirit can be powerful and wisdom is powerful, but we're finding people who are actually beginning to use it more and more. In the form of psychics, people looking into astrology, numerology, we find this a lot in the New Age, so-called New Age metaphysical community, where they may not be right about everything, but they're certainly trying. And that's what growth is all about. You know, it's fine to make mistakes. That's just a natural part of the learning process. So we are at the beginning stages of this, where our people who are experimenting with spiritual growth don't know all the answers yet, but let's give them a hand for certainly trying, and let's see how they do, maybe pay attention to what they're learning and see if it's useful for ourselves. Because remember, everybody goes through all these different paths of learning. Myself, and I found that certain things I'm interested in, certain things I'm not. And so, you know, I look at some information and it's just not right for me at the time. I'm not interested in it. And other things get me very excited and I follow that. So information is out there for all of us to use when we need it, when it's good for us. The fourth level of intellectual life is called the acknowledgement and utilization of nature's laws, generation of hypertechnology, the second creation of living forms. Well, acknowledgement and utilization of nature's laws. Nature's laws. How many people have actually stopped and even thought about laws of nature? Well, we know there is a nature out there, and scientifically we're starting to understand a little bit more. But perhaps there really was some logic the creation had in mind when it created nature. Maybe nature really does live by some set of logical rules and understanding. Wouldn't that be amazing to find out? That maybe there really is something we could learn. Well, there definitely is. There's nothing illogical in creation. It had to learn, figure out, and think out every step of the way for it to evolve, and we're really not paying attention too much to nature. So at this level, at that fourth level of intellectual's life, when people get to that level, that's what they can expect to be working on in that area, understanding of how nature really works. For instance, some of nature's laws, like gravity, can be broken. the mind can actually levitate objects. Now, Billy has learned these things and on some occasions has used his spiritual force and his knowledge of nature to actually do things like levitation. He's been known to do that. There are even pictures of him levitating an oven onto a truck when they were moving at some point. And he's demonstrated and explained much of this information to the people around him by doing the simple basic things like bending spoons, heating up coins and other things, as well as telepathy is a form of nature's laws, understanding how that works. But understanding nature mostly is understanding how the planets and all of nature operate, their cycles, and how we live with it. Imagine if you had the ability to cause a tree to fully grow, say, within a year, instead of taking 50 years. Now, that would be manipulating nature's laws, wouldn't it? But if you were at the point of development where you understood exactly what it was in nature that caused a tree to grow, why it grew at a certain rate, and why it would take 50 years, there would be a point where you would have the knowledge and understanding, perhaps, to interface with that and speed it up. You would then be interfering and manipulating or utilizing the laws of nature. Well, generation of hyper-technology, of course, that would be the area where we just plain understand more and more about the universe, and that's going to come naturally, definitely, as we move off the planet. The fifth level of the intellectual life is called the natural exercise of wisdom and knowledge and cognition of spiritual forces. Now, cognition refers to absolute knowledge, when you have knowledge of something. Excuse me, not the belief. So at this level, we're talking about where we are beginning to learn so much about the spirit that we have cognition, that we have actual knowledge of exactly how spiritual forces work. And people will begin using them in a factual way with predictable results. The sixth level of intellectual life is life in knowing about wisdom, it says, truth and logic. Well, there isn't, our world doesn't run much on wisdom, and most of us don't run our lives based on wisdom, truth, and logic. But some people do, a small percentage of our society actually does, that they base their life and the control of their life and their growth on logic, truth, and wisdom. There is a time when that becomes more and more important to people, and the material things seem to slowly drift away, where we're less concerned with material pleasures, and we start living our life using wisdom, and the things that we do are based on truth instead of, illogical things. Okay? The seventh level of intellectual life is the primary cognition of reality as an absolute. Now, that's an interesting statement. Primary cognition of the reality as an absolute. That means that there really are truths, that there is definite laws to the universe, and we not only have heard about it, but we've tried it out, and we found out it's true. We're discovering the basic matrix of creation itself, and we get to the point where we actually understand it, start to understand nature's laws, and we start to actually live that way. The Pleiadians say this is the present position of just a very few border and spiritual scientists. Very small percentage of our population. That's the first three levels or steps of development of human life. And obviously these are all still very material lives. Again, the reason for the material life is the senses. The types of information that the spirit needs to grow then is very basic stuff. Primary reasoning, thinking, and working out the intellect. All of this is done through experiencing things with the senses, and then from those experiences, those things which are correct according to creation are added to your spirit and carried forward from lifetime to lifetime. And you make use of them once you find out you actually have a spirit, and you make some use of it. If you don't know you have a spirit and don't make any use of it, like many religions will teach, where you actually think that the whole purpose of life then is just to worship a god of some type, then you're not going to make progress very fast. You're going to actually be living spiritually stagnant lives because there will be practically no progress whatsoever. Because in truth, the only way to spiritually grow is to understand that you are responsible. You are 100% responsible for your own growth, your own evolution within creation. Okay, the fourth level, or the fourth step of development of human life, is called the real life. Okay, four-step real life. First level is the clear knowledge about reality as an absolute. Now, we mentioned last step in intellectual's life here that we're beginning to understand that there were real absolute laws or logic to creation. So in real life, we're going to go through several lifetimes where that becomes very clear, where we really develop a clear understanding that there really is absolute logic to the creation. The second level of real life is the cognition of spiritual knowledge and spiritual wisdom. In other words, we really then have got it locked in. Cognition means that we have the truth about, okay, the facts. That means that we would have the real truth about spiritual knowledge. We not only would know that we have a spirit, we would be past the period where we're experimenting with it, and we would have actual knowledge of how it works. We would be using then the true wisdom of our spirit that's within our spirit to govern our lives. We would be using our spirit then actually to reach out into creation and pull knowledge back for us. It would become a definite part then of how we live. We would be, in effect, becoming more and more of a spiritual being and less of a material being. Our senses then would start playing a less prominent role in our life. Right now, whenever we approach some situation in life, we use our eyes, our ears, touch, sense, smell, and so forth to quickly make a decision on how to react. We're very material beings, most people on this planet. Most everything is observed as a material being, and decisions are made basically on material senses. Well, over a period of time, we become more sophisticated, and that's what this is saying. We become more sophisticated, we have more knowledge of spirit, and pretty soon we start finding out that the spirit is actually very powerful, and that we can perceive the world using our spiritual abilities, because our spirit now is in fact very intelligent and has connections to higher intelligence. Plus, in order to evolve now, it is necessary to get information that provides experiences at a higher level. The spirit's no longer interested in how to make fire, and it's no longer interested in petty rivalry and fighting and arguing and silly belief structures and so forth. It has lived through those periods. And in order for the spirit to grow now, it needs more sophisticated knowledge. Knowledge that the material senses don't necessarily provide. They still go out and get information for us, but the conclusions that are derived from that information are done more and more with the spirit itself. The spiritual self is making more conclusions. So we're becoming more of a spiritual person and less of a material person. Okay? The third level of real life is the utilization of the spiritual knowledge and spiritual wisdom. Well, this is just an extension of what we were talking about. But now the individual is using his spiritual knowledge. So his abilities of telepathy, the force of his spirit is increasing his lifespan. The force of his spirit now is controlling his health. Might even be controlling more of what you look like, where even through your own spiritual force, you could control how your hair is growing. You wouldn't need to sleep as much. The wisdom within your spirit would be so powerful that you wouldn't even ever consider lying or doing things that are illogical. You're becoming a person who does things so much for the right reasons that you're always lucky. Things just naturally go your way all of the time. Okay, the fourth level of real life is called cognition of the reality of creation and her laws. Now, all along, here for many lifetimes, we're starting to understand that there is a creation. We're slowly becoming aware that there's some logic to the creation itself. It's not illogical. We know all about our spirit now, and now we have cognition. Our spirit has developed so much that it is tuning in more and more to creation, higher influences, higher life forms, higher sources of information, and we have factual proof, factual knowledge of actually how creation works. Remember earlier in our tapes when Billy was allowed to spend 7 minutes in creation, or eternity as we called it? And that during that time he was allowed to remember that. So he was exposed for 7 minutes to the creational life force and then was able to remember it afterwards, and what a change in his life that was for him. Well, not only he got to experience it then, but now we're talking about a level of life where you would constantly be aware, because of the force of your spirit, what's going on in creation and most everything you do in life now, is through the utilization and the awareness of creation itself, creation's logic, and if you want to call it that, creation's laws. I don't particularly like the word laws. It sounds like something man-made, like it's fixed in stone, and I guess that's why they use the word law, but I prefer to use the concept of logic, the logic of creation. Okay, the fifth level of real life is the living from the creational laws, or logic, purification of the spirit and the intellect, cognition of the true obligation and force of the spirit, complete breakdown and acceptance of beliefs. Well, this is a pretty major step here. We now have a being who's still physical, but they're living mostly from the creational logic totally, where they are so aware now of the logic of creation and all of its knowledges of nature. They are so knowledgeable at the spiritual forces that they're living their life based on all of this knowledge. They're becoming much less a material being and having far less use for the material senses. Okay? It also says they have cognition of the true obligation and force of the spirit. So now we have total understanding of what the spirit is for. At this point, there would probably be almost total awareness of previous lives. You would be well aware then all the time of your connection of spirit within creation, and you would feel the force of the perfection of creation all of the time. Also, it says complete breakdown of belief structures. Well, obviously, at this point, once you have all the facts about creation, nature, and your spiritual self, you're no longer caught up in belief structures because you know the truth about things. So at this point, there are no more belief structures. This is the present level of pretty much the people on the Pleiadian worlds. At this point, they have understanding of the nature's laws, of the spiritual laws, and they have great understanding of the logic of creation, and this is their level of understanding. This is why their morality, their spiritual development, and so forth, is so much different than ours that they, frankly, have no interest at this point in having any sort of social commerce with us, which is quite understandable. Our thinking is much different. Many people are always concerned about the Pleiadian context of Billy and Meyer, why they did this or why they didn't do that, and why they would react some way, or why don't they get more involved here, or why didn't they do something. Well, herein lies your answer to most of those questions. They're living at a total different level of understanding and development within creation. Their viewpoints of the world are entirely different. The way they respond to things is much different. They're obviously going to be far less emotional and prone to anger and flying off the handle and things because they have so much knowledge about things. When you see people who get violently jealous or angry and hatred and so forth like that, these are very undeveloped beings who are responding to stimuli in the world at exaggerated levels because they are strictly material beings. The spirit doesn't respond like that. The more and more you become a spiritual being and live within spiritual logic and creational logic, there is less reason for that. You will just be able to be a calmer person and deal with things in a much more balanced way. Okay, the fifth level or step of development in human life is called creational life. Up to now, we've also been dealing, though, strictly with physical life forms, and at this point, we are still a physical life form, following the basic logic of creation, where we have a physical life, a sleep period, a physical life, a sleep period. Even during our physical lives, we're awake and we go to sleep. So the logic set up by creation from the very beginning of the off and on, of the awake and the sleep, permeates throughout all of our life forms as well as our own, and permeates human life. It is still necessary for us to have the death cycle on purpose so that the spirit can cogitate, so that the spirit can sleep. So that is the primary thing that we have to have. It's still necessary for us to sleep even at night, to rest the physical being and so forth, even though that the spirit doesn't sleep. It never goes to sleep. It's always open for business. It's always listening. Even though your subconscious is rattling around in there when you're dreaming heavy at night and working out the problems of the day, your subconscious is paying attention. It's always open. It never dies. It never sleeps. Okay? Well, we're at the fifth step of development, creational life, and we're still having physical lifetimes. At this point, though, they will be much longer because the force of spirit creates a longer life, a healthier life. It is a natural kind of perk, you might say, of creation, that the longer you live, the longer your lifespans go. And that's because of force of spirit. When you're very young, your spirit has very little, if no force, has no wisdom, and cannot sustain the material life very long. One, because of low intelligence for survival, plus it has a very low life force, so it really can't even sustain the life, the physical life, very long. But as you get older and live more lifetimes, the spirit becomes much stronger, and at this point in creational life, where we have seen that we have lived through periods and millions of years of existence, we've accumulated much knowledge and wisdom about nature and spirit and creation. So at this point, we not only live longer, we live healthier, we live happier, we live luckier. Okay, the first level of creational life is creating and control of living forms. Well, at this point, they're suggesting that there's a time when we have so much knowledge of creation and spirit forms that we can actually begin to create our own life forms. And I shouldn't use the word create. We manipulate, more or less, fine matter energies into making life forms. At this point, for instance, an example would be that you would be able to develop, say, an organic android. You could, by knowledge and your understanding of nature, spirit, and creational logic, create a life force, an android that actually could live and think, walk and talk, and so forth. Now, it may not have a spirit like we do, but the Pleiadians do have these. They have armies of these things we would call like droids that do their manufacturing and other work. It would also be possible at this point that you could probably procreate a spirit. Procreate means cause it to be born. That's what happened to Billy. He was caused to be born along with three other individuals, 1937, at an exact time in the morning, on purpose, by Pleiadian beings who were developed enough and understood well enough how to use the force of their spirit and their knowledge to cause Billy's spirit to come into material life at that time. So that's what it's suggesting here, control of living forms. The second level of creational life is the construction of machine apparatus, livable creatures. Well, again, here we're talking about making different types of androids, I guess we would call them, living life forms that you, because of the knowledge that you have. The third level of creational life is spiritual development of forces for control of material and organical forms of life. All right? Well, your spiritual force here then is probably very much in control of nature. You could probably cause flowers to be born by the force of your spirit. You might even be able to cause them to mutate or transmit into other forms. You would have those knowledges. The fourth level of creational life is this will-conditioned mastering of life and all of its forms and spirits. So here you're definitely becoming a master of the life, where almost total knowledge then of the primary thinking, of the intellectual, of the spirit, of nature and creation is within your grasp. You have almost total knowledge then, after millions of years of lifetimes, of the entire life cycle up to this point. Now that makes you very, very knowledgeable, but again, of course, now... Okay, we're going through the fifth step of development of human life, which is the creational life, is what the Pleiadians call it. And we're on the fifth level of that, which is called the position of recognition, reminiscence of earlier lives, etc. So here they're talking about not only understanding that there is a previous life and so forth, but you would have cognition of them, that your force of spirit is strong enough now that you can actually move in time more or less and see them, feel them, and understand them well enough. You would be able then, for instance, when a new person is being born and coming into life, through the force of your spirit, you could get in touch with that newborn spirit that's just come in to the woman and find out who it was, and even help that spirit when it's first born to understand itself and its own path of evolution. Wouldn't that be something? I mean, we're all born into life and we stumble around. We're depending on what environment we're born into, we're taught all sorts of unusual beliefs and sort of things. And most of us wind up at being about 20 years old, really confused about what is life and what we're supposed to do. Well, depending on the society you live in, you're channeled into some area. You'll be a businessman, or you'll be a nurse, or you'll be a housewife, or a cowboy, whatever it is. And depending on what country you grow up in, you're taught that life is this, or it's this, or it's this. But most of us at some point in our life, our curiosity gets the best of us, and we want to know other things. We've got other questions. And like myself, I'm sure many of you have worn out a passport or two traveling around the world looking for a few answers. I know myself, I've done China and I've gone through that in Kyoto, Japan. I've been through Egypt and studied that old technology just out of interest. And perhaps there's something in my earlier lives which have led me to those areas to look for things. I'm not sure. But it's pretty fascinating how we really go look for some connections. We try to find ourselves in the life and figure out what our purpose is, figure out why we're here. Many people really would like to understand just what they're supposed to be doing with themselves this life. Well, if we had someone at this level, at this development of level around, they could probably, help us find it. Even at our level of development, which for most of us is, far less than this, that we're learning through mild self-hypnosis and so forth to try to get in touch with ourselves a little bit more. And many people are learning to meditate, to get into themselves and find some of the answers. And they're paying more attention to dreams that come to us at night and looking for, logical reasons why we're doing what we're doing. Okay, the sixth level of creational life is called a king of wisdom, an Ishwish. Now, in the tapes earlier, I was telling you that in the old Lyrian language, Ishwish meant king of wisdom. And this is a person who is still in the physical world, but has almost total and complete knowledge. He is a king of the wisdom of life. And this is where that comes into play and where that word came from. In our tapes, we were talking about Ptah being an Ishwish, Sannyasi's father who ran the Great Spacer. He was an Ishwish. So he's living through the many lifetimes, the several hundred or maybe even thousands of lifetimes, at that level of physical development where he is really rounding out his total knowledge of life. It has total understanding of all of nature's and spirit's force, as well as the logic of creation. The seventh level of creational life is cognition of spiritual peace at the universal love and the creational harmony. This sounds interesting, doesn't it? Cognition of spiritual peace. In other words, this being has become so developed, has such total understanding and connection through his spirit to creation himself, that he's living in spiritual peace. He can no longer be moved to hate and anger and jealousy and these things. His knowledge is far too great. He's a person of great wisdom that lives with a thorough knowledge and understanding of what life is all about and has complete cognition and awareness of creation and his connection to it. Must be a very peaceful, content state to be in. Also of the universal love, of the great universal love force that creation has for all beings, no matter what they may be doing that day. This is an important lesson for all of us, and many of us are learning now that just because someone doesn't look the way we like or act the way we like, we can still stand back and see them as a spiritual person, as a spirit form on their path. And you look at that person and almost it's almost humorous, and you you think, well, he's not doing anything that I would be doing. But you're not prejudiced. You pose no value judgments. You just see an individual as a spirit form on their path, doing what they think is right for them, on their own path of discovery. You're not threatened by them. There's no feeling of competition. You just look at them as another spirit form and go, all right, I'm with you. Send them a little of your own life force. Send them a little telepathic nudge that you care about them, that you love them, and you don't want anything from them. Give everybody their space to be themselves. Because as you're seeing now, we're all on our own path. As we go through all these steps of life that we're talking about, development of life, millions of years are going by. And each one of us is on a different path, a different level of discovery and learning. We're all looking for information that we need so we can crunch it with all of our little mechanics, with our subconscious mind, make our little logic, and feed our spirit what it needs at that time. We're all still making mistakes and learning. So look at someone else, and when you see them, don't look at them like, oh, gee, he's fat, or she's not this, or she's too tall, or I don't like the way they talk, or, oh, gee, he's an Arab, or she's black, or whatever. It's nonsense. That's strictly a material viewpoint. You're looking at someone with strictly material eyes and with a material mind. It's time we all started looking at each other using our spirit and seeing each other as spirits. all as beautiful, loving spirits on our own path, needing our own space. And we can help each other. You know, that's what it's really all about. When we quit looking at each other as material objects that we need something from, or we're prejudiced about, or we're competing with, or we're angry with, or we disapprove, when we can get past that, when we can see each other as spiritual beings, all of us are in creation, we're all created to the same universal love of creation. When we can see that, then peace actually will come to Earth, and we will all be living in a more peaceful state. And that's where creational harmony comes from, because I'm quite sure at the creational level, the creational source that's actually controlling and providing the life force itself to all living things in the universe, it's unconditional. You don't have to pay a price every day for the life force that's within you. You know, we're beginning to be able to measure that there is a life force, some sort of energy source inside the body that makes all this matter, actually animates it, makes it work. You know, that spark of life that's within us. Well, you don't have to pay a fee for that. There's no tariff. It's unconditional. You are given that creational life force by creation itself to live your physical life. And nothing is asked in return. How unconditional can you get? Well, the sixth stage of development of human life is what's called the spiritual life. Okay? The first level of that is the acknowledgement and realization of the spiritual peace, the universal love, and the creational harmony. Well, acknowledgement of it. Realization of spiritual peace. What a blissful state to be in. You're becoming aware and probably living most of your physical life now in some sort of state of meditative creational bliss where you're not paying attention to the world any longer with physical senses. You probably need no sleep at all. You can probably live for several thousand years just by the force of your spirit. And for the most part, you spend most of your time so connected to creation through the force of your spirit that you view the world entirely that way. The second level of development of the spiritual life is living in pure spiritual forms. At this level, you have almost no need for the material senses. They're probably beginning to even shut down, where you no longer need ears to hear. You can sense with your spirit. You don't need eyes to perceive things. The force of your spirit is probably so strong you can project it anywhere and see what you want. You don't need to smell, and you're not going to hit anything. You're not going to walk around because you can probably float or project your essence, your spiritual force, to wherever you like. The third level of spiritual life is spiritual creations. At this point, you are probably so developed as a spiritual being that you are very involved probably helping lower life forms come into life, get through life, providing perhaps, maybe this is what spirit guides actually may turn out to be, these higher life forms, people on the last throes of physical life, which can actually provide life force, not life force energy, but spiritual energy to lower beings to use, to learn from. Perhaps it's broadcast at subconscious levels and we pick up when we sleep and so forth. The fourth level of spiritual life is disembodiment of the spirit from organical matter. We are now at a point where the things that our spirit needs to evolve can no longer be obtained through material senses. There's no longer the necessity or the need for your material senses because they cannot gather things that are of any use to us. Things that we now need to continue our evolution will only be possible through the use of our thoughts, of our thinking, of our spirit. Our spiritual conscious and our spiritual subconscious are now taking over. We no longer need the body. If we no longer need the body, we no longer need the death cycle, which means we no longer need our senses. At this point, the death cycle will stop. And we move into the fifth level of spiritual life, which is the first spiritual existence. That means you move into a state of existence which will last for thousands of years, perhaps tens of thousands of years, where there is no longer a death cycle. Where the body, you are still in a physical body, but it's fading. Where you would be so less dense, so light in weight, that at some point someone could put their hand right through you. At first, you would still be able to be seen as a physical form, but your features would be getting, you know, less distinct all the time. Your body then has so little density to it, you probably weigh a pound and then practically nothing. But there's no more need for the death cycle, that stops. The sixth level of spiritual life is the final spiritual existence. The final spiritual existence would be a point where your spiritual energy has existed then for tens of thousands of years, has ultimately come together in connection with other spiritual forces, other spirit forms, and created what is commonly called collective consciousness. At that point, that collective consciousness, or high level of life, which Billy calls the Patali level, or even the Arahat Athrasada level, which, by the way, is seven different levels. Arahat Athrasada is a combination of seven spirit forms together at one time. That's a collective consciousness. Patali level is even higher. At that point, there is no awareness, and has not been for tens of thousands of years, there is no awareness of the material body or senses any longer. Such does not exist. You are almost totally out of the coarse matter being and now becoming a fine matter being. Okay? The seventh level of spiritual life is Passover into creation. There is a point at which the being then becomes so developed, we've been moving towards perfection all of these billions of years, and now we are almost to it. We have got to the point where wisdom and knowledge is so great, we now have such knowledge of creation, we are beginning to participate in the actual workings of creation. Our fine matter existence is at such a high level, where the frequency of our thoughts is so high, we are almost totally out of touch with any material existence. The things that we do then, I can hardly imagine, would certainly be at the level more of just the control of creation itself and nothing to do with day-to-day life cycles. The seventh step of development of human life is called creation's life. And this basically is just the twilight sleep. At this point, the human and spiritual consciousness has merged together with the creational force that created the universe to begin with, and then is taking part in the actual workings of the creation. And at the time that the creation pulls back together and goes into its twilight sleep, at that point, our consciousness, our spiritual self then, is part of the next creation, which creates the next universe, which then goes on to create six more and eventually evolves into being an entire Ur-universe. So the function of ourselves, our individuals at this point, is to slowly evolve through all of our material existences, five levels of physical existence, working into the sixth level of light body existence, finally ending up with creation itself. All the way along, we're providing knowledge, wisdom, and strength to the creation in our own small way. Each one of us is participating and adding some little bit piece along with that. And ultimately, we wind up being part of creation's life. And this, in the old times, is where the concept of that we are all gods came from. And I hear that phrase returning today. It's in many of really old teachings, and they talk about the self and the one being at one with the creation or the gods or whatever. Remember also, as we talked about gods on the Emmanuel tape, gods are actually another way of describing what an Ishwish is. An Ishwish, a king of wisdom, is a being who still exists in the physical, but has almost complete knowledge of nature and spiritual and creative logic and laws. That's what a god is. A god is a being, he's at the top level of physical existence, but beyond that there is more. So a god also is subject to the logic of creation, because creation was the original idea that started all of this and created the universe to begin with. But creation isn't something that I see that needs to be worshipped or even thought of as a religion or a belief or anything like that. It's not a philosophy of life. It is the logic of what really is. It's just a matter of fact. As we learn more and more about it, we'll find that creation, since it created the universe and all life forms and so forth, it wasn't a human being. It wasn't a life force. It was a thought. It was an idea taken from another universe, which is going to perpetuate on and on and on. So we slowly have to let go of the idea of worship and that anything is responsible for our day-to-day lives. We are given a life force to use by the natural universal love of creation. We have intelligence and ability and aptitudes based on our accumulative life wisdom that is ours to use. And it's up to us what we do with our current lifetime. You can say we're 100% responsible for our own life, but when you live in a society and an environment like the one on Earth right now, are we really? I mean, there is so much of life which is dictated to us. There is so much of life that is forced upon us, where you're going to live, how you're going to think, what you're going to react to, how you're going to dress. There are so many things in life that are pushed upon us that we really don't have too many choices. So we are at a point of development where it's very difficult for the individual, once he even decides to lead a more spiritual life, it's very difficult. For one thing, you can't live in a major area, a major city, and consciously think that you're going to have very much spiritual growth. Because one of the first things you find out when you start developing yourself more spiritually is that we're all tuned into each other. That there is some form of kind of we form of thoughts that move among all people. And when you start tying into that, you find out that it's very unhealthy to be around large centers, i.e., for instance, like Los Angeles. If you live in Los Angeles, if you're listening to this tape and you live there or New York or some major metropolitan center, you know that once you leave there, you say you go on a vacation to Colorado or some sparse area in the mountains where it's beautiful and you're back in touch with nature and it's lovable and the people are nice and you're having a great time and you're with somebody you love and, you know, everything is just wonderful and you're so peaceful and happy. Well, that's the natural state. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's in that environment, in that state of mind, where you can actually start growing spiritually because you're living more as a spiritual person. But when you get back on that plane and vacation is over and you go back to your major metropolitan, smog-infested city full of hate, anger, prejudice, and everything else going on, you have to defend yourself against all of that. As soon as you get back, it's like, there's this big heavy weight comes crashing on you because not only do you have to react differently to people on a freeway than you do to a reindeer in a forest, but your spiritual self has to start defending itself once again from this heavy mass of concentrated energy that's being created by these millions of people that are unhappy in this major metropolitan area. So if you take spiritual growth, you know, seriously, you can read and study and so forth in a major metropolitan area, but if you really want to get serious about it, you're going to have to get out of town. You're going to have to move into an area where it's possible to live with nature, where you can actually live as a spiritual person, because the laws of the society of our country are certainly not in line with the laws or logic of creation, or even with nature. So in the city, you know, we burn up everything, we cover it with concrete. We're certainly not living with any respect with nature at all. So if you want to be a spiritual person and develop somewhat in those areas, you got to get back out into nature and live with it. There will be a point someday we may elect a president based on wisdom instead of on power and economics and control. At that point, there'll probably be a major change in our world. And hopefully the people of the United States, which are the leaders of the planet Earth, we provide the leadership and the inspiration. Perhaps the New Age metaphysical movement in this country will continue to grow. And we'll fight for the truth and we'll, you know, follow through and develop more and more as spiritual beings. And they will develop and learn to do more and more things because it's the right thing and because it's the truth. They'll discover more about the truths. And ultimately, the spiritual beings of the planet eventually will overtake the material beings. And at that point, we will have a peaceful society, much like the Pleiadians do, and we'll have a better understanding of all of these steps of development of human life. Okay, we've just finished discussing the seven steps of development of human life. And by discussing those development steps, we are assuming, of course, that what we call reincarnation is real, which means that there are two different types of life. There's a physical life, and then there's the other side, sometimes called heaven. And what the Pleiadians call a fine matter world. The spirit that is us, even though it manifests itself through material lives, also is a never-dying, never-ending, energy form gathers information from these lifetimes. So it is a fine matter existence. Okay? Now, what is the fine matter world like? Well, that's something that's really plagued man for a long period of time. What is it like after you die? What really happens? Where do you go? Or do you go anywhere at all? Well, among the Pleiadian information, here's what that's all about. They call it the other side, or the fine matter world. Commonly in our society, we generally think of it as heaven, at least in the Christian community. So we're talking about the same thing here. We're talking about where it is you go when you die. To begin with, what exactly is death? There is, if you have, for instance, a car accident and the doctor comes and you're taken to the hospital and they pronounce you dead, that means that the doctor is saying that your physical body is no longer functioning, that you are, your brain is dead, there's no longer anything going on in the material body, so they call that death. Well, that is physical death, or clinical death, medical death, whatever you want to call it, but it's not necessarily spiritual death. Spiritual death is at that point that the spirit actually leaves the body. When there is spiritual death, the spirit leaves the body. It's called flesh-like, instantly. It just zips right out of the body. Now, that can sometimes be at the same time as physical death, but in some cases, the body just isn't quite dead yet, and the spirit hasn't really left. It's just not detectable by the instruments that our doctors use. But in most cases, usually when there is death, the spirit leaves quite very soon after that. In some cases, it might be a few hours, or maybe even a day or so in some particular cases, where the body is still functioning, but the doctor just can't quite detect it. But what happens then? Well, the spirit separates. And when the spirit leaves the body, once the spirit leaves the body, then the body couldn't possibly exist any longer because there's no spirit there to drive it. That means the life force the creation provides has left the body. Your spirit now drifts off into the fine matter world. Well, where is the fine matter world? Well, it's right here. You do not leave the planet. For one thing, whatever planet you're born on, you stay there during your material life, unless you find some way off of it. But whatever planet you die on, if you die on the planet Earth, your spirit stays on the planet Earth. It's not possible for it to leave. This is part of creation itself. It's part of the logic of creation itself, because your spirit is tied to the planet that it is living on. And that's for a number of reasons. One, what's called the Akashic Record. There are several energy reasons why that needs to be. It's not a choice that the individual has. When you die, you stay right here. The spirit really doesn't go anywhere. Spirits kind of congregate, you might say, in a layer of energy around the planet. They really don't go anywhere. They're just now existing in the fine matter world. Some people think of it as another dimension. But they are no longer concerned with the material, because they're no longer in the material world. Actually, the fine matter world is kind of a state of cogitation, was the word that Billy used to try to describe it. He says it's similar to kind of like when you go to sleep at night. If you've been up all day and you've had a number of things on your mind and you're working hard, whatever, when you go to sleep at night, your conscious mind is shutting down and your subconscious mind is in there just working away, trying to solve some of the problems of the day. And you know from your own experience, if you go to bed with a lot on your mind, sometimes it's very hard to sleep, isn't it? You find yourself sleeping very lightly because you're working out the problems of the day. Well, when you die and pass over into the fine matter world, one thing, the material body is now gone, there's no more senses, so you're not gathering any new information. So it's kind of a state of cogitation like sleep is. Your spiritual mind then, your spiritual self then, is kind of finishing up or cogitating all the things that has happened to it during its lifetime. It's similar to kind of like what a sleep state that's going on. One comment was, and they didn't clarify this too much, they said that there are several stages that the spirit will go through before it returns again to the material life. So it's suggesting that there could be some different levels of growth. Okay, there is awareness on the other side. The spirit, once it's on the other side, it is possible to contact it. It is possible to make some sort of communication, but it's not recommended or suggested. The Pleiadians say, for one thing, try to remember that once the spirit leaves this world and goes into the fine matter world, it's not learning anything new. It's not experiencing life at this point. It's in just kind of a sleep or a cogitating state. So it doesn't know anymore than it did when it was here. And it has little or no memory, probably, of any actual experiences at that point. What it has is the wisdom that's taken forward. Because the spirit itself does not accumulate memory experiences. It accumulates wisdom from experience. That's what it takes with it. So if you wanted to contact a spirit on the other side, although it is possible, don't expect to find any profound any information or anything, because they don't know any more now than when they left. Interesting enough is that it's really not very simple to contact the other side. For one reason, they don't really have any interest in the material, because at the moment you're not real interested in being on the other side, are you? You're not interested in getting in the fine matter world. You're trying to stay alive. Well, when you're in the fine matter world, apparently, there's not really much interest in the material world either, because you're not in material form. You've left your body behind. You're now a fine matter energy again. It was explained that in order to get in contact with the other side, though it is possible, but it's necessarily to know what are called keys or symbol language, that in order to communicate with them is very difficult, and that most of the times when mediums or psychics, whatever, believe that they are in contact with the other side, they really are not. Really what they're doing is picking up telepathically images and memories and so forth out of the individual's mind that they're talking to. For instance, if you were to go to a psychic and say, gee, I would like to get in touch with my great uncle Harry, can you do it? And the psychic says, well, let's try a seance and let's see if we can get in touch with Uncle Harry. And she may believe that she is whatever, but she's not. Because what she's actually doing is she's telepathically picking up information from you out of your mind about Uncle Harry. And then you're fascinated that suddenly that she knows what Uncle Harry looks like or what Uncle Harry says. And she may remark something that you'll say, oh, gee, that's just how Uncle Harry talked, or that's what he always said. So you think that somehow that they're in touch with Uncle Harry when they're not. To begin with, Uncle Harry in the fine matter world probably doesn't give a hill of beans about being in contact with anybody. And if he actually felt something telepathic from a psychic, probably wouldn't even respond or do anything about it. The other comment was that occasionally people do make contact with spirits, even trying to trap them, get their voices on tape. And the Pleiadians remarked that quite often that a spirit, once it's on the other side, doesn't even want to be contacted. And if it is, usually, regarded as kind of a nuisance and will give disinformation or treat it as a joke or will say something kind of silly anyway. So it's not really recommended. The other view was the fact that since the spirit is in the fine matter world on purpose in order to sleep and cogitate and kind of, recuperate a little bit from the material life, it's not a good idea to even disturb the spirit. They don't. On a Pleiadian world, it's considered just not a good idea to even disturb the spirits, and they don't do it. They just leave them alone. Well, this leads us into the next topic of kind of interest, which is reincarnation. By the way, the word reincarnation and incarnation are the same thing. They both come from Greek words, and they mean exactly the same. Now, let's say this spirit has been on the fine matter side of the world for a period of time, and it's time to come back. Well, how do we know, or how does the spirit know when it is time to come back? Well, there are a few determining factors that determine when a spirit can come back. To begin with, when you're in the fine matter world on the other side, there is no time. You are no longer in the coarse matter world, which is affected by the time impulses, the wave of energy that we call time that moves through. It only affects the coarse matter world. So when you are in the fine matter world, there is no feeling of time. There's no sensation of it. A spirit could stay on the fine matter side for thousands of years and really not be aware of it. It's not like they're awake, standing on one foot or the other, just waiting to get back into the material side. So you don't have to worry about being stuck over there. What does happen, though, is this. Normally, on a planet like Earth, where we have such a high population, okay, when someone passes over into the fine matter world, normally the average turnaround time, the Pleiadians call it, before they will come back into the material life, is on an average of 152 years. That means if you live a long and normal and healthy life to fulfill your lifespan, that you will come back in approximately 152 years. And then you would re-enter the window of opportunity, they call it, and come back into life in someone else, generally within the family. Now, that time span can be altered somewhat. And here's how it works. If you have a shortened life, maybe you die from an accident, young child, 10 years old, is in a car accident and dies, okay, they will come back faster. Okay, the longer you live and the more you learn, the more you contribute to your spiritual growth, the slower you come back. Okay, the shorter you live, the less you learn, the faster you come back. You have no say-so in this. It's part of the mechanism of creation, which tends to balance things out. So people who live a long period of time, if they live to be 90 or 100 years old and have had a really good life, they probably wouldn't live that long anyway unless they were basically well-balanced, happy people. So they're probably going to come back slower, 150, 170 years. If someone, however, you hear of a young child dying at, you know, at birth or a one-year-old, they may be back very quickly. Generally not less than 15 years normally. However, there's an exception to that rule. Apparently, every 25,860 years, when the Earth moves in closer in proximity to the central sun, which it is just now, and has been since 1937, we call this the New Age, is the general jargon or term to call it. But there is a step up in frequency and electrical radiations, apparently, that influence several factors in our life. And rebirth is one of them. And there is a tendency, I'm told, that for rebirth to be faster during this time period. So it's quite possible, even that a young child, say, it should die at birth or perhaps from abortion or something, that they'd be back very quickly, possibly right away, within a few days, weeks, or months, something like that. Okay? When it's time for a spirit to come back into the material world, it's a natural process of creation. The spirit really doesn't decide what time it's coming back. What happens is when it's ready to come back and has something to do with like waking up in the morning when you're just ready to wake up, when it's ready to come back, creation will provide the mechanism by which it happens. And there's a natural tendency for that spirit to come back within family. The first priority apparently is usually level of evolution, that the spirit will try to come back into a woman equal in level of evolution. We'll try to stay within family. Quite often, your great aunt Harry may have been someone else's aunt, have been someone's uncle, or something like that. You can change gender from lifetime to lifetime. Creation doesn't do that. People do it kind of subconsciously. How that works is this way, that there is kind of a programming that's done subconsciously in the individual. If you are living a life as a male, and wish to come back as a male, it doesn't take any more than thinking that. You literally program your subconscious for wanting to be a male in the next lifetime, and it will be. It's not decided by the mother. It's decided by the spirit itself. If you are apparently unresolved on the issue and really don't even think about it or care, however your subconscious will, it may kind of go either way. So you have some choice in that. There is some programming involved there. If you go through lifetime and are confused about your male role or your female role, which some people are, perhaps they go through life and they're having a terrible time with their love life and their sex life, emotionally they're upset, and they just are totally out of balance, and they go and they die, and they are confused about themselves and about their sexuality and so forth, then they will come back pretty much the same way. When they come into life, there is no programming. They come back in slightly confused, and depending upon environment, they may continue to be confused, and this is what leads to homosexuality. Homosexuality is not a third sex. It's not something we should be developing in our society and giving rights to it. It is a confusion of spirit in the fine matter world. And once we understand more about that, we can help people when they have confusion of spirit by helping them find out what they're doing, what they're thinking, and help these people find themselves, you know, gender-wise. The Indians were always good at that. They would teach the young men to be more male and to understand their male hormones and their male attitudes and, you know, come with me, son, and do this and so forth. Now, I realize it's probably not quite as simple as that, but that's the general idea about what confusion of spirit can cause. By the way, when there is a conceptual act by a male and a female, within 3 weeks' time, right at about 3 weeks, is when the spirit makes the decision whether or not it's going to come into the mother. Okay, so it's within 3 weeks, although the mother's not aware of it. But that's when the spirit makes a decision whether or not to attach itself to the woman in this window of opportunity. The woman becomes pregnant and provides a window of opportunity for a spirit to come in. It will within the third week, and then it attaches itself to them. At that point, the spirit has decided that it will be born in this woman. So in a Pleiadian world, the morality of abortion then, the issue would be that there can be no abortions after 3 weeks because a decision has been made that there is an individual then attempting to come into life at that point. On their world, however, they benefit from greater spiritual and creational knowledge, and many of their people have the ability then to telepathically communicate with the spirit coming in to see who it was, any problems they may have. Did their last life end in trauma? Are they bringing some confusion with them? What path are they on? Excuse me, are they needing some sort of special knowledge? And they can actually sense the feelings and experience that are in these beings, read their past lives, and see what they need to learn when they're coming into the new one. In other words, they treat each newborn baby as a person that's on path of discovery, that's on a particular path of searching and knowledge, and they facilitate that. What a marvelous idea. Now, in our world, we look at children as possessions. You know, if we have a son or whatever, we say, ah, this is my boy. He's going to be a football player. He's going to be this or whatever. And we look at it like we created it. We possess this thing. We have made it. You know, this is my boy that I made, or this is my daughter, and so forth. Well, that's kind of a wrong viewpoint. We need to start looking at it as if these are people coming back into life on a path of their own. These are people coming back into a new life that need understanding, that needs special attention to their personality, to their character. We're not supposed to mold them into our shape. They're on their own path of discovery and knowledge. They're working on their own evolution. They're not working on our evolution. They're not here to serve our needs, to bolster our ego or whatever. They are not a model of us. We get confused by that because quite commonly they look like us. See, the man and the woman provide much of the information that goes into actually creating the body. The spirit itself, when it comes along, provides certain information, generally in the face. If you could see pictures of yourself, say, for the previous lifetimes, you'd find that the right across the middle of the face, where the eyes and the nose and the ears in that area, are very similar. That face, that look in the eyes in there, seems to be, for some reason, the spirit itself dictates how that looks. But the rest of the body is, of course, dictated mostly by the factors from the mom and the dad. So when the baby comes in, or the person comes in, it makes the decision at the third week, it's in there then developing. Just a little aside here in dealing with the reincarnation, I know this is a subject that, you know, we don't have a lot of nuts and bolts scientific information about this yet. We are not developed yet enough in spirit that we really know very much about it. We're just kind of, we're in the belief stages here. However, there has been some marvelous work done by some English people in studies in India where there's been young children come in and at a very early age, when they're able to talk and so forth, still have vivid memory of a past life. And there's been a lot of studies on this. It's very fascinating. Where these young children, maybe say they're 5 years old, they'll be born, and they will describe a lifetime in the room that they were in, what their parents looked like, where they lived, everything about it. They'll have a vivid memory of it, which is amazing. And these investigators will go track it down, and they'll find that these kids somehow knew everything. They were exactly right. So somehow they came back, and quite commonly it was very fast. Generally, it was a very quick turnaround. So there is some much better information than we had before leading to this idea of reincarnation and reinforcing the idea that it actually does exist. As we become more and more developed in the use of our spirit, it will become more obvious to us individually that it is true, because more and more you will have the ability to actually see your own past lives and the futures that you're creating for yourself, and you'll know yourself that it's real. A couple of things, we're talking about birth here and so forth, and there's a few ideas that the Pleiadians had about, and Billy had asked some questions about that I thought were kind of interesting that I want to run over. When a spirit comes in to a mother, there are several things that go on here. And one of the, some of these things have to do with the chromosomes, the DNA and genes that are intermixed going on here. Because we have a father contributing, we have a mother contributing, and then we have a spirit coming in. So there's three people all taking part here in the creation of this new material person, of this new persona, this new personality that's being formed. Because at this point, the spirit that's coming in is not a personality. Okay, it doesn't have a name, it doesn't think of itself as a name. It is an energy force that is moving into a new material life, helping to create a new material life, and it carries forward it with it wisdom from previous lives, but it's not bringing necessarily memory, and it does not bring persona. A child is not born thinking that my name is Larry, this, that, and the other. Although there is some strong indication that children like to name themselves. And then on a Pleiadian world, for instance, the mother will telepathically try to make communication with the child to see what it wants to be called, its first name. Because the first name of an individual on a Pleiadian world is, like we talked about earlier, indicates their knowledge and level of evolution and the wisdom. Something about the individual. Names have meaning. And there are many people you may have run into that don't like their name and prefer to call themselves something else. Where a parent will go through a book, they get in a store, and they'll look through all the names, and they'll name their child something they think is really great. And, of course, the child had no say-so in the matter at all. And it might be a name that feels wrong, just doesn't apply to that person at all, and doesn't make any sense. How many people do you know that don't use their real given name? An awful lot of people use a name that's slightly different. For instance, even myself, my name is not Randy Winters. I was born James Randolph Winters. Randolph was my middle name. I've never used James. I've never used Jim. I've never even heard anybody call me that, except for a brief period for a couple of months when I tried it out once. I had moved, got a new job, new friends, and I told everybody my name was Jim. I was already about 25 years old, and I thought I'd try to see what it felt like. It felt so odd, so left-handed, I just didn't feel right at all being called Jim, and so I dropped it. I grew up always being called J.R. or Randy, and I never used the name James, and my family, for some reason, even though they named me James, they never called me James either. Even when I was a baby, I was little Randy and little J.R. Okay. Well, dealing with genes and wisdom and intellect and so forth, there's a few comments here I thought you might find kind of interesting. One thing that the Billy asked you a question about chromosomes and so forth and how they affect people, and the Pleiadians mentioned that normally human beings have the same number of chromosome pairs within them. Chromosomes carry the information for character, for the form of the body, and the sex of the individual. Now, the sex of the individual information is going to be given to that chromosome by the spirit when it comes in. The chromosomes are the essential carriers of the genes, which influence the chromosomes and cause them normal or abnormal switching and so forth. Age is a gene-conditioned factor, they're saying here. And that the brain and the spirit then use the genes, in other words, to do certain things. They give information to the cells to regulate life for the regeneration and disintegration of the cells. Genes are not connected to intelligence because this is caused by spiritual evolution. Again, the spirit carries forward the wisdom from the lifetime, brings that forward and puts it into the individual when the body is being created in the mother. Spiritual thinking and wisdom and intelligence are factors of the spirit. These manifest themselves organically in the brain. What happens is once the spirit comes into the body, at the third week, okay, it's about the eighth week that the brain starts being formed. Okay. When the brain is being formed, we have the mother and father who have contributed their genes, their factors. The spirit then comes into play, and here's why. What happens is, as the brain begins to form, it has to know how many connectors, neural connectors, dendrites, synaptic junctions, and so forth to make so that this individual can think. Well, some of that information comes from the spirit itself. The spirit starts sending information to the newborn material body that's being formed on the number of connectors and so forth that are going to be needed to house the intelligence of the wisdom of this spirit. So once the neural connectors are all in place, we got all these dendrites and so forth that are in place, then a very interesting thing starts to happen. The information then from the spirit that's carried forward from all these lifetimes It's fed into the body, into these connectors, and it flows into the acids that are in the brain. So the information, the fine matter information, is transferred from the fine matter world. A copy of it is more or less kind of downloaded into the coarse matter world, which is the acids in the brain. Because we already know the connectors in our brain, when you think, all these little neural connectors get excited and run through the dendrites, and there's all these synaptic junctions that little electrical charge goes off, and it affects the chemicals in the body, and the chemicals in the body do this, and then so forth, and all the cells are affected, and our body is in operation. Well, within those acids in there, that is where the wisdom from your we were discussing how wisdom from your spirit gets into your body when you're born. And we were just talking about how once your brain is being formed, it receives information from the spirit, telling it the number of connectors to create so it can be housed. And once all the connectors are made and so forth, the information from the wisdom from your spirit flows then into the acids in your brain, making a coarse matter copy then of the knowledge that's in your fine matter spirit. So you then have access to the information from your previous lives in two different ways. Excuse me, you can access it then through your spirit and the fine matter self, or you can access it through the acids, which is what we do normally. So your material body then has been provided with a copy, so to speak, of all of your wisdom. This is where your intelligence comes from. Actually, it's where your aptitudes and your abilities would start stemming from, because you have information to draw on. You notice how some people, as they're going through life, some things are just very easy for them, or you find yourself sometimes already knowing things very easily. You may have come across some philosophy or idea in life, and it just makes a lot of sense to you, and you already seem to know all about it, and you just kind of go, it's real easy to you. Well, that's because that information or wisdom from an experience similar to that is already in there. It's already in the acids. You already have information, background, wisdom on that particular subject. If you get a feeling of deja vu sometime, like you've been someplace before, or you've met someone they're very, familiar, whatever, it's quite possible they were. Or it's quite possible you've experienced something very similar to it before. So you have a certain amount of information you get. It's kind of like buying a computer and it comes with software already. It already has word processing and database and things already in it. Or you might get a computer with nothing in it. But our brain seems to work pretty much the same way. It's unfortunate in our society that we don't know enough about spirit power yet and spiritual knowledge and abilities. So we really don't train people in the use of their spirit. Well, it's a real good thing. If we didn't do that, if the spirit didn't put the information in the acids and we didn't have a copy of all of our wisdom, we'd be in big trouble. So thank you very much, creation, for at least allowing us to, have some sort of access on the material side. This leads us actually to an explanation of why we're all different as far as aptitudes, abilities, and intellect. As we're going through our material lives experiencing things, we're accumulating wisdom and knowledge, and it comes with us. Your advantage to using your spirit to access this is, one, it's probably of higher quality because the acids in your brain can become damaged. They can become altered because of poor pregnancy, health problems and so forth. Dietary disease and things can set in and affect the brain, the connectors and so forth, so that your material self does not function completely properly. But the spirit side of yourself cannot become ill. It cannot become illogical. It never goes to sleep, and it doesn't die. It always retains the wisdom. So at any given time, you can always access your spirit through meditation, or you can even do it in a conscious wake state once you get better at it. You can access using your spiritual self and find out information, not only about yourself, but you can use your spirit, as we're going to talk about a little bit later, to access other levels of information, other people, Akashic records, ETs, higher life forms, etc. Another interesting thing this kind of leads to is the fact that if a copy of your wisdom is in the acids within your brain, then it's possible to transplant those acids. It's quite possible that we could, and some scientists are already working on this, you could take an individual that's very lowly evolved, or someone who we think is kind of mentally off of it or retarded or whatever. And in many cases, these people are just very young spirits that are born into our society with so few lifetimes that they have no accumulated wisdom. They're not idiots. We just call them that clinically because they seem to not be able to do anything. But quite frequently, these are just beings of low evolution. Well, you could put an acid transplant. You could take a person of high evolution and take some of the acids from them, transplant them into the other individual, and they'd perk right up. Gone would be the confusion, and their level of evolution would pick up greatly. This is one reason also, because of the acids, why it's possible that a mother and father, perhaps of low intelligence or low evolution, it's possible for them to have a son who could be brilliant. And vice versa. Really brilliant parents could have a son of low evolution. That's not the norm, though. Generally, it's more of a normal because the level of evolution is one of the main priorities of when a spirit comes in and chooses a mother or comes into a window of opportunity. So normally you don't see that too often, but it is possible. The genes then that are in that are influenced by the spirit, and they pick up all these impulses and they store, and they can create confusion in a life form when you have a real mental illness. See, a real mental disease can quite commonly be caused by a confusion of the spirit itself. You can't make a spirit form sick, and you can't make it illogical, but it can become confused in some areas where it has wisdom and knowledge and so forth that's gained from experience, and it could be at a point where it hasn't quite solved things and it can be confused. Well, in that particular case, then the spirit is affecting the genes that are in that person. The impulses then are picked up by the genes, they're stored, and this person becomes confused in a lifetime. So that's entirely possible. Actually, another thing that's pretty fascinating that can happen is that on some occasions, when a person dies and the spirit leaves the body, if it's an accident or it is at a time when the subconscious of the individual is not expecting it, your subconscious knows when you're going to die. It already knows that. You can access that generally yourself through meditation if you want to find out. Well, your subconscious is always knowing what you're going to do, even in a few days in advance. This is one of the techniques that the Pleiadians use to examine our subconscious and find out what we're really thinking. They can do that because even though you're thinking consciously, most people are not aware that they can access their subconscious or don't bother. But your subconscious knows what you're already planning on doing for the next few days. So it's possible to actually access that in there. Well, when an individual passes over and is going into the fine matter world, quite often, if it's not a expected death or the individual just doesn't want to leave the material plane for whatever reason, that spirit can actually move into another living being where we have a person then who suddenly is housing two spirits within itself. That not only is possible, it's not that uncommon. Apparently about 10% of the time that happens, and this can lead to what sometimes is considered as mental illness, where a person suddenly has dramatic personality changes or suddenly becomes very confused. I can tell you I'm quite aware that some very well-established clinical psychologists have stumbled across this accidentally, where people have come to them quite confused with apparent mental illness and they can't figure out what it is. And through hypnosis, they've been able to find out that there is another personality inside of this individual. And during hypnosis, the psychologist has been able to talk to that other individual, that other spirit which has moved into this person, and convince them that they have died, because they don't know where they are. And it'll convince them that they have died, and it's okay for them to move on, to let go, and go on into the other side. That they are confusing the person that they are in a wrong body, that it is unnatural, and to move on, go on and fulfill yourself with your own evolution. They will. The person will come out of hypnosis. The spirit will leave instantly because it has the ability. Once it just gives up hanging on to the material, it slips off into the fine matter side. And the person almost instantly then is relieved of its confusion. There are documented cases of this, hundreds of them, by several clinical psychologists. So it's not just an oddball theory. It's actually really happening. Okay. We've been talking an awful lot here about our spiritual side and our material side, and we've been talking and figuring out about how we go through life cycles, we go through seven steps of development of human life. So, and all of this is following the logic of the creation. All of these things that we go through, these cycles of life that we go through, are all embedded in us. The instructions, so to speak, and the matrix that controls all of this life cycling and evolution is already built into the creation itself, because we are a bit part of the creation, and we are just going through the cycles the way it was meant to be. So that's why we have seven stages of development, and that's why we are actually two beings. We are a spiritual being, which is going through a series of material lives. Those material lives, those personalities, that's you and I on the material side. We are Barbara, Nancy, Bob, Larry, whatever our particular personality is right now. But that's a material being. Just for a moment, I'd like for you to get the exhibit that I have in the little handbook. There's a drawing of a big circle, and it says the two-part being on there. It says on the left side, the material side and the spiritual. And I'd like to explain to you a little bit, as it was explained to me, how the material being and the spiritual being actually interact and what's going on while we're in this material life. You see, even as you're listening, thinking, all the time that you're in your material life, you are also a spiritual being. And that spiritual being is in there all the time, listening, paying attention, and trying to gain in spiritual growth. That's the whole impetus why you're trying to learn all the time. That's what drives you to find out things, to make a quest for information. The spirit needs food, and the food it needs, the way it eats, is experience, it's truth. It needs wisdom from your experiences. So you're always encouraged by your spirit to go try things, look into things, and search for answers. And that's where that comes from. Well, on my little drawing here that you're looking at, you see on the left side it says material side, and over on the right side it says spiritual side. Now what I've done here is I've just made a little drawing to show you the relationships between the material and the spiritual. It's just a little diagram to explain a few things. You'll notice on the left side it says that there's a conscious part on the material side. Now we know that. That's what we're using right now as we, you know, sit there and listen to this tape. We have a conscious side, a conscious mind that we use all the time when we're awake. We also have a subconscious. Some people call it unconscious. Some people are unconscious. But we have a subconscious self. The subconscious has its little machinery that it does. It's kind of like the engine of our self. It's where we do all of our, you know, our thought processing, our number crunching, and so forth. And then there's a thing that's called the psyche. The psyche over there is kind of your storehouse. That's where you keep all of your material memories, ideas, and conclusions, and so forth. It's kind of like the hard drive on your computer. Okay. Then there's a little thing there that says we form. We'll come back to that in a second. And in the middle it says filter. Well, there's a filter between your material side and your spiritual side. See, even though your spirit is awake all the time, it's listening to everything that your material side is doing. A lot of things it just isn't interested in. We have a lot of thoughts, feelings, and ideas that ramble around in our head that our spirit has no interest in. It doesn't want those. It's looking for the wisdom from our experiences, which are correct according to creation. It's trying to add to itself through growth, through your experience, through your material, personal experiences. So there's a filter in between. I call it a filter, but it's just kind of a little something in there that it's kind of like a microphone, I guess. It's listening to your material self, and it receives information, and it decides whether or not it's correct and whether or not it's interesting to accept it. Over on your spiritual side, there's also a spiritual conscious mind. It's like a receiver and sender unit. There's also a subconscious on the spiritual side. It also can think, do some number crunching and so forth. There's a little we form there, which I'll explain in a minute. And then there's something called the Gemüt, G-E-M-U-T, Gemüt. It's a word in German which means receiver and sender or sensor. It's slightly different than the psyche, its counterpart on the material side, in that the psyche only stores information and all your memories from your material life. Okay? But the Gemüt, on the other hand, is more of a sensing device because it's connected to other forms of information, higher levels of thinking. This is where your spiritual power comes in. The ability to use the Gemüt as a sensing device to actually move out and get information from different sources. And there's a language concerned with that, which I'll talk about in a minute. Well, these are the basic parts of the material side and of the spiritual side. So let's talk about those just a little bit. Let me explain a little bit about what each one does and excuse me, what happens as you're going through your day-to-day thinking. Okay, over on the material side, you notice up on the top there, it has the five senses there. That we've got sight and touch and smell and hearing and so forth, your senses there. And you know what these are? This is how we gather information. Now, here's what happens. Your material self, as we've mentioned before, the reason for your material life is to gather information. Once you gather that information, then you proceed to think about it, you form logic, and you do a little number crunching, whatever, you make conclusions, and you store that information. And once that information becomes part of yourself, it becomes the wisdom from those experiences, and that's added to your spiritual growth. Here's how it works. Let's say you're having an experience, and let's make up some sort of experience here. Let's say something common in life, maybe a career move. You got a new job. Okay? You've been working at a company for a while, and you know, a big promotion's coming up, and there's you and two or three other people that are online for the promotion. Now, let's make this a happy story. So let's say you get the promotion, all right? Well, as we're going through life all the time, we're using all of our senses all the time to gather data, aren't we? You know, right now you're using your ears to listen to what I'm saying, and you use your eyes to read information, and we have touch. We touch things to see what it's about. We smell it. We taste it. These are how we, all of our sensors are out there, material sensors, are always gathering information and feeding it to us. Well, as soon as that information comes in from our sensors, as soon as we see something, our conscious mind regulates all of these sensors. As it receives that information, it very, very quickly runs right down to see if we have any information on that. You see, the conscious mind actually can't make any decisions on its own. It has an entirely different function. It's responsible for gathering the information and bringing it in and so forth, but on its own, it can't make any decisions really on its own. So it doesn't. Actually, what it does is that when that information comes in from you, it quickly directs that thought or idea directly to your subconscious to see if we have any data on that. Because in your subconscious is all of your knowledge, and it wants to know if this new incoming thought, we're sympathetic to it, or if we have any feelings about this. What's our opinions? Do we have any knowledge? Is there any data on this thing that just came in? And it's done very, very quickly. So what happens is, as you're listening to this tape, reading a book, or, you know, you just heard some information about this promotion that you're going to get it, you become very excited, but maybe somebody says something, well, gee, the person who gets the promotion is going to be the one who had the highest sales. And you're quickly thinking, oh, sales. Your mind flashes off into, like, you know, running back over all of your sales numbers to see if you're, you know, think you might be eligible. Well, as soon as you heard that information about the sales, your ears picked it up and went through your conscious mind turns around immediately. And in an instant, in a flash, it runs to your subconscious to get any data, to see what we think about that, and then comes back and gives a feeling or an impulse to your conscious mind about any data we have on that, and then you react. You react like, oh good, I'm okay, or gee, that's bad, or gee, I better look that over, or, you know, you weigh in one word against the other, whatever you have to do. It gets that information from the subconscious. So, because the conscious mind on its own really doesn't do anything at all. The subconscious is kind of like the computer of the individual. It's the actual center and the control guidance center, you might call it, and that's responsible for the individual's entire internal communication, as well as its connection with the spiritual realm, because it's through the subconscious that the individual tries to get information into the spiritual subconscious all the time. Well, it's also responsible for person-to-person contact. You know, if you want to, get in touch with someone else telepathically through feelings and guidance and so forth, and that's where that little thing called the we form comes in. But now, when our person here is up for a promotion, he's using his senses and so forth to gather information, and it comes in, it goes down to the subconscious to see if we have any data, if we have any known facts on that. And then it flies flashlight right back up to the conscious mind, so the conscious mind can actually react. That's how the system actually works. The psyche, on the other hand, which is down at the bottom down there, that the psyche itself, it just does feelings and thinkings. It's kind of like that's the area, actually, it's the factors of thinking, feeling, it processes an individual's your disposition, your morality, and that's the type of things that are down there. So, you know, we want to be careful what we feed that. Well, what happens is every time you are making decisions, and let's say now this guy gets the promotion, and it leads him into new information, but what's he done now? He's experienced a promotion in life, and because of that, he learned new things about himself. He met new people, and his life changed a little bit now because of these new leadership qualities that were put upon him. He had new things that he... new problems he had to work with. He was exposed to new challenges in life by virtue of this promotion. So he had some new things in life to conquer, to learn and to do, and it changed him. Have you ever seen someone, maybe when they get a promotion, their attitude changes a little bit? Leadership sets well with them. It brings out a different part of that individual, and they change a little bit. It becomes part of that person. Well, when something becomes part of you, when you've had an experience that becomes part of yourself and changes the way you are, then you've gained some wisdom. Those are the kind of experiences that your spirit is interested in, because that's the kind of information that your spirit collects. So what would happen is these experiences, these new ideas and wisdom and so forth that you get, this wisdom from all of that, will go through that filter, that sensing device there in the middle, and that will go over and be stored over in your spiritual subconscious then and become part of your continuing knowledge. That sensor in the middle also is kind of a buffer between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, because the subconscious mind does not like to be bothered all the time with the type of information that's irrelevant or frivolous. If you have some fleeting thought or whatever which really doesn't have anything to do or you're not serious about, the subconscious doesn't want to bother. The sensor will bounce it back, and the subconscious really isn't bothered at all. So that's the process. Then we have this little thing called the we form there in the middle. The we form actually is what many of us think of as telepathy. What the we form is, it's a sensor. It's a sensing device, much like your other senses, but it works a little bit differently. You see, the subconscious mind has the ability to move thoughts and feelings among all of us, among people. And it does it with kind of an image language, a symbol language. Now, the we form on the material side is called primary telepathy. The Pleiadians use the phrase we form because there's all these we people are all formed into one consciousness. For instance, let's say our fellow that's, forget the fellow, let's just say yourself. If you've ever been in a really crowded area, maybe you get into an elevator and you get in and you turn around and you're all alone and there's some very unsavory, large, slurry, dirty character in the elevator that's looking at you like, you know, there could be potential harm here. You're very uncomfortable, okay? Well, you're not only all of your senses are reading his look and feel and everything, but he's probably projecting some very unkind thoughts about you. And that's done from subconscious to subconscious, and it's your we form that's picking that up. Have you ever walked over to the phone and known it was somebody calling, or had a hunch who was going to knock at the door, or, you know, you had a hunch to go pick up your laundry or something, or just some feeling? That's what comes out of the we form. The primary telepathy is confined pretty much to the planet. It's short range. By that I mean you can pick up thoughts and feelings from people around the planet. This is also how, like in large metropolitan areas, that the subconscious of millions of people who may be unhappy, angry, or unrestful and so forth affects other people. We talked earlier about how you really couldn't have spiritual growth in a major city. This is one of the reasons why. Because your subconscious mind, without you being conscious of it all the time, is constantly picking up these feelings, images, and so forth from the we form, the telepathic we form in your subconscious on your material side. Now you notice over on the right side it says we form also, and it calls that spiritual telepathy. That's a little different. Over on the material side, the primary telepathy is rather basic. It's a form of hearing. It's a tone that comes in the ear that you can learn to receive it. That can be blocked. You can learn actually to block out those feelings and so forth so they don't really bother you. On the other hand, over on the other side, the spiritual telepathy, unlike the primary telepathy, is very long range. And this is how Billy was able to receive telepathic transmissions and so forth from the Pleiadians and other higher life forms over on the spiritual side. This is also what channeling is supposed to be. When you receive information from other beings and higher sources, it's done through the subconscious we form on the spiritual side in the form of telepathy. And this is a language of symbols. There are over 50 million symbols, sometimes called keys, that interpret spiritual knowledge. And if you wish to be in touch with higher life forms and so forth, this is how it's done. You develop the use of your spirit, and you receive telepathic images in this language that come into your spiritual self. They then are translated into your speaking language and sent to the material side. So never is there a trance needed. Any person who is actually channeling, it's impossible to channel a being from another world, because channeling is only short range, and channeling concerns itself with the psyche, which is your center for feelings and thinking and so forth. Also, this interplays if a person has an ego problem, wants to be popular, wants to be noted, wants to be thought of well and so forth. These thoughts interfere in the individual when they're channeling, and that's why they create the persona. It's done by their insides, their psyche, and their subconscious, more or less, get together and create this euphoric meditation. That's why they always speak and make up some strange sound. This is Uthor from Egypt or whatever. You know, well, it's not. It's an individual creating that by themselves. Channeling is not real. It is never accurate. If you wish to receive information from a higher life form or another individual on another world, it is done through the spiritual self. It is done through this spiritual we form, and it involves the knowledge of the symbol language actually receiving it. So that's how it would actually work. You do not have to be unconscious. There is never needed the trance, and there is never needed a separate persona in order to receive this information. You can learn to do it in a fully conscious, awake state. The Gehmoot's a fascinating little device. The Gehmoot over there is a sensor. You've heard people talk sometimes about how the silver cord where you're connected to creation. Well, that's kind of what the Gehmoot is. It is a sensing device that can connect you to higher forms of information also. If you are interested in contacting your higher self or someone else's higher self, you can use the spiritual we form to do this. It, of course, takes a lot of practice. Some people it comes easier than others. And it's done through an understanding of this symbol or key language, and you develop it through meditation. Meditation is no mystical magic or anything. It's the simple process of just learning to control yourself, control your mind, to control your material self and your spiritual self, and turn one off and on as you like. You see, meditation, what you do is you shut down your material senses over there that are all very active. You shut down your conscious mind, and you get into a state of meditation, which is a balanced state where you, the individual, then have access to your spiritual self. And then what you do, once you gain knowledge of your spiritual force, you actually get in touch with your spiritual self, that power will develop. You can then ask for and receive the symbols and keys of your own name, of your own self. You can then start looking and finding symbols and learn more symbols so you can access other higher forms of information. Now, aside from some ET on another planet that you may want to talk to if they're willing to respond, one of the more interesting things to access is something called the Akashic Records. Now, what are the Akashic Records? In metaphysical terms, they're sometimes called the etheric records or whatever, but here's the general idea. As you are thinking, and as everyone is thinking, thoughts, remember now, are forms of energy. Energy condensed and so forth to higher levels of compactness or condensation, I guess you would say, can be formed into matter. But at any rate, thoughts don't die out. Once you form a thought, it is a very, very small impulse of energy that you have created by virtue of your own brain, and they are stored. Well, where are they stored? Well, your thoughts are stored, you know, in your subconscious. They're also your stored also in this Akashic Records. So an Akashic Record is a band of energy around a planet that stores all the thoughts of the people on the planet. There's also a storehouse of knowledge or an Akashic Record around a galaxy, and there's also an Akashic Record for a universe. All these forms of Akashic Records store different types of information. Now, you have access to these Akashic Records all of the time, and you access them through the we form on the spiritual side. The knowledge of the past, though, is protected. You can't just jump into it. It's not like open to everyone. You have to learn how to use the we form and how to make this connection. Psychics tap into the we form quite oftenly by accident and are not even aware of what they're actually doing. For instance, I know there are... if any of you have seen Luis Gasparetto do his spirit paintings, that's what he's doing. He's accessing the Akashic Records. Here's what happens. Let's say you want to get in touch with Da Vinci. Well, Da Vinci, the personality that was Da Vinci, is dead and gone. He is reincarnated out as somebody else, and there's been maybe one or two lifetimes since then. So Da Vinci himself is gone. Da Vinci is no longer on the other side. He's not in the fine matter world. If he was, he wouldn't respond anyway, because in the fine matter world, he's not Da Vinci. He is a collection of all of his lifetimes at that point. But if we want to access, say, Da Vinci and do something, we can get access to Da Vinci's thoughts in the Akashic Records while he was Da Vinci. And that can be done through the we form. We would have to find out how to access his particular records, because the Akashic Records is made up in levels. There are levels of evolution, and each level of evolution has like a memory level in it, and you need a key to get into that. So you learn through meditation, you send a pulse to certain levels that gets you into it. One interesting thing is you can't get into a level of information in the Akashic Records that's higher than your own evolution. So if we're going to try to get access to Da Vinci's thoughts and feelings that are in the Akashic Records, we couldn't get access to any of those thoughts and feelings at a time when his level of evolution was higher than our own. So if Da Vinci was much higher evolved than us, we wouldn't get very much. We would get something, though. But what happens is when you get in touch with those feelings, let's say we learn the symbols and we find out how to send the pulse, we can actually get in there, and just for those moments while we're in touch and in connection with the Akashic Record, we will think and feel like Da Vinci. And our body can react. It can react in the form of auto-writing. That's how it's commonly done. It cannot react vocally. It's not possible to get into the Akashic Records and speak like Da Vinci. You can't channel the Akashic Records, in other words. You know, Da Vinci's not going to come into your body, take over your body, and speak. That's not possible. But it is possible for you to access the Akashic Record and think and feel like him for a moment, and you could write or draw and do things. Billy demonstrates this by quite easily, within very simply, he can get into the Akashic Record because he knows most of the keys. He has access to many different forms of information which were taught to him, and he can suddenly think and feel like Enoch or some particular one that he happens to know the key for. So that is a possibility. That's one way you can get in touch with other forms of information through the Akashic Records. One other thing I'd like to touch on just a little bit while we're discussing this material and the spiritual self, and by the way, just kind of give you some insight into this, you know, that we also have emotions and attitudes and so forth that we build. When we come into the world, the material side is very clean. It's like a clean slate. Our psyche has no feelings and thoughts in it. Our subconscious is like a blank hard drive in a computer. It doesn't have any stored up memories at that point. We're a newborn person in the world, and we just kind of got here, and all we have with us when we come in is that accumulated knowledge from the previous lifetimes. So we're all happy. We're just dad-dad-goo-goo happy to be here, and we smile and we love everything. Don't we wish we could keep that all of our life? But it doesn't stay that way. You know, all of a sudden, all sorts of things are dumped on top of us. And while we're laying in the crib, you know, our senses are starting to work, and we start perceiving knowledge of the outside world. And about the age of 2, we start becoming aware of the outside world. And I think that's why babies cry almost their entire second year. They're probably sad to be here in some areas. You know, they're moving into the material world and they don't like the way things are going on. It's probably a little uncomfortable for them. But what happens? Our senses start picking up the experiences of life and we start developing our little attitudes and emotions about how we react to things. Let's say we have an individual who's 30 years old, who's divorced, become an alcoholic, and lost his job. If we have someone like that, what has happened? He's lived through some terrible experiences. He makes associations with his experiences. He develops all of these emotions and attitudes towards certain things. Then every bit of information that comes in when he perceives something, let's say about his divorce, maybe his wife always wore red shoes, and he sees a woman walking down the street with his eyes, so the sensor, the eyes pick up the red shoes, what's he going to do right away? He immediately associates that with the bad memory of the recent divorce, doesn't he? So he doesn't actually perceive this person as they really are. He doesn't see them subjectively at all. What he does is, instead, when he sees this person, he just sees red shoes, a trigger goes off inside, and he doesn't react normally towards this individual if he's going to react at all. So we can be greatly controlled by all of our programming we go through life with. So one of the main functions that we need to do is to learn to meditate, to close down some of our emotions and attitudes, all these knee-jerk responses that we develop and so forth as we go along, so we can control ourselves. So we can learn to reprogram ourselves and see people objectively when they walk down the street. I mean, not subjectively, objectively. When they're walking down the street in red shoes, so we can just say, well, there's a pair of red shoes, and there's a new person that I don't know, and don't make any attachment to all of the difficult feelings and problems that you may have had during a divorce. But we do that. Our material side, as we go on and on in life, if life becomes difficult, become very difficult for us to think clearly and stay in balance. And this is what leads many people, unfortunately, to becoming hostile or violent in life, or depressed or angry or jealous. Life's experiences build up. They have so many problems in life that are so difficult. They develop all these emotions and attitudes where they can't see things clearly. So their subconscious never even gets a chance to react. And then if they're too far gone, which leads to violence or jealousy or whatever, that the spirit itself will just literally shut down. It will no longer even be interested in any of the information that the material self is gathering. The life from that point on is just considered a spiritual waste. That the spirit itself will no longer be interested in anything that the material side comes up with. No more wisdom could be added because it's all illogical. Meditation allows us the possibility of reprogramming and changing things. It is the process where we can shut down the material senses, and very slowly an individual that may have all these problems can learn to overcome them and reprogram themselves through benefit of their spiritual self. They can literally ask their spirit for advice and help sort out problems, which the spirit will do. Your spiritual subconscious will go in there and think things through for you, and give you back feelings and ideas and hunches that are, good for you. Your material self then, especially if someone's guiding you, your material self then can begin to learn from these experiences and start seeing itself clearer and get itself back in balance. So we have a process here by which we could reclaim mental health. We could overcome personality problems, depression, things like that. We could, through meditation, incorporate this in and make kind of a new psychology of the future through spiritual development. Through use of the spirit, which never gets sick and never dies, we can learn to control and change ourselves somewhat. Again, you see that the spirit's always open for business. It listens to everything, unless you go berserk in life and it has to shut down because you're way off track. But it's open all the time. It records all your thoughts, all your movements and so forth. It's paying attention to everything. And it sends answers to the human being if his thoughts are right or wrong. You just have to learn to pay attention to it. You learn through meditation to create what's called the pause. That slight split second when information comes in, and before you react with your material self, you consult your spiritual self to see about that. ask yourselves, like asking a good friend that will always tell you the right answer. You can learn to pause and kind of like mentally, quickly get an opinion from your spiritual self, and it will answer you truthfully. The spirit is the carrier of the creation. It's found in everyone. On our spiritual self is that part piece of creation. And remember, creation is the perfection. It has the ultimate peace, the ultimate universal love. So what a great place to consult with. And if you have this great spiritual self within you that has the ability to touch and feel that and consult with it and draw information from it, why not use it? Many of the old philosophers always made reference to the individual as being, you know, every man contains a microcosm within a microcosm, and that's true. Because everything in the universe that exists, everything within creation, also exists in the human being. There are different dimensions in the inner being that are endless. So it's beginning to look like the matrix of the creation, the logic of the creation, comes into the spirit. The spirit facilitates creating the body. So information from the spirit is in every cell, every atom particle of the body itself. And these get smaller and smaller all the time. So there's kind of like microcosm within microcosm. There's a copy of your creation. Your spirit has a copy of creation. It's in everybody. And it contains all dimensions. You see, when an individual can start looking at life with a balanced view from his material side and his spiritual side, when he learns to start using the spirit all the time as a source of energy, of knowledge, of wisdom, then he starts becoming a much happier individual. That way he's not prone to knee-jerk responses and emotions that get him entirely out of whack, and he's not going to overreact to things and overrespond. He'll be able to calmly see things. He'll be able to always refer to his spiritual self for knowledge. The nice part, too, is that he'll just be a lot happier. An individual who lives, you know, by the creational logic, who uses his spiritual self and is always seeking to get closer to creation, will find that he is somehow just luckier, and he has kind of spiritual poise. See, luck belongs to the inner being. It's an inseparable mark of the existence of the spirit within you. When you are close to that spiritual self, it just naturally happens. There's a force that rises up in you. The material body may continue to age. It gets older and the material body changes, but the spirit itself doesn't age like that. Even though you may be 50, 70, 80 years old materially, where the body is starting to deteriorate, the spiritual self has not aged. It still remains young and healthy and vibrant inside in there. So you can even use your spiritual self to facilitate looking better and living longer. At least while you're alive, your material self will be happier, more fulfilled, and you'll have a healthier life. Once an individual recognizes his spirit, he becomes to become more powerful, and doubts and things like that in depression just vanish away. If you even try it yourself after listening to this tape and start making some efforts in meditation, we have a tape on meditation in this kit also. If you listen to that and start practicing that, you'll find just with a few simple exercises and practicing, you'll get in touch with your spirit. You'll be able to use it a little bit and find that there's an exhilarating feeling in calling upon your spirit and doing something for the right reasons and finding that it's actually in there and making that connection with creation. It's exhilarating. The world will look different. Instantly, you feel better about life. Any fears about death just vanish right away. And there's this wisdom that comes into you that there's a calmness with it, a peace with it, that makes you feel really good. And it's kind of like an inner light that comes with you. See, wisdom and spirit, they're two factors, but they really result in just basically the same thing, because your spirit contains all of that wisdom. A person who knows and can feel the creation once that happens develops an inner peace and assurance. He can defend himself against any kind of silly thoughts or strange feelings in because of the power that grows within you. The way you do it is you deliberate on the truth, wisdom and knowledge of creation. It affects your feelings and changes an individual's thinking. The more you direct your intelligence to the quest of knowledge about the creation, the more forceful becomes your personality and the easier your life actually becomes. First, all it's necessary to do is learn the kind of the spirit intellectual mode of thinking, and then you recognize how right it actually is, how it actually works, how you can actually get in touch with the creation itself through your spirit. When you have your first successes through meditation, then you move forward by very large leaps and bounds because you know you're onto something. You get excited and there's this enlargement of the spiritual self. There's this like inner power. You start feeling much luckier. Things just get easier. It just happens for someone. And you begin to understand that it's good to be 100% responsible for yourself. You develop this feeling of confidence and assuredness that only comes from the knowledge of your own personal power, your own spirit. Your development then is free from fear and anxiety. Those things no longer bother you at all. So you would no longer have any doubts or fears about death. They just vanish, and you can keep constantly in touch with this feeling about universal love and the great feelings that you can get by constantly knowing that creation is there. It's a great strength. Previous life is stored in coarse matter form. Now we're into billions of years of lifetimes. Into creational universe, I mean central universes.